Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello, and welcome to episode 36, I believe, if we can count. I've run out of fingers. How you doing, Mark?
Yeah, we saw the problems last week when you labelled it as 34 instead of 35.
Yeah,
and Carpcast was to put weight on and not knock it off.
Yeah, and even more confusing, because I use an old template from previous shows, and then I delete stuff and put new tracks in and stuff. It's all a bit complicated on the studio software, but the actual file is named something old, like 28 or something. I think the current one I'm using is 28 with Daryl Peck, and where I've transferred all the stuff from one computer onto the MacBook now, so I can do all the studio recording when we're out on the bank and stuff. All a bit technical, and I'm guessing listeners don't really need to know the production stuff, but basically the software's a lot better, but It's so effective. It like records. It kind of remembers things as they are. So, when I actually bounced it down and saved it to an MP3 to upload, it bounced it down as 28 Daryl Peck, which the old one didn't used to do. It's whatever the new thingy that you put in. So I changed that, and somehow it ended up being 33, which was the latest template. I don't know how. Anyway, so depending on how you downloaded the file, some people's file said 33. We said it was 34, and it was actually 35. but anyway, I'll, God knows what this one's going to be, but it is officially Carpcast 36. So yeah, loads been going on. We are slightly late again, although we aim to get it out on a Saturday, but we've been behind since the Northern Angling show. There's been other shows since. You've been to a show this weekend, haven't you?
I drove 180 miles down to deepest Essex for the Five Legs Carp show, which it's the first time I've been to that show for quite a while, and also about 5 years since I've been to a show as an actual punter and not tied to a stand, so I quite enjoyed it, a lot more relaxed.
Did you spend loads of money?
I spent loads of money when I went to get some food.
Yeah, nobody likes the catering at these shows. It's kind of like motorway services reminiscent, isn't it? Yeah. Like overpriced, dried up food, because you're kind of captive in one place and they stitch you up. Hopefully at the Northern Angling show we can do something about that. Last year, I mean, this year the bar and food area is probably the best it's been, but we have no control out of it. They sell it out, so we have no control, but apparently next year we can buy it out, the catering, and do our own, which is probably going to be expensive, but it means that the output will be better, and it means we can build our own sort of bar in there and possibly have a bit of a party afterwards. Although as we know, drink and carp anglers don't always mix. There's been a few stories over the years of incidents, shall we say, when it's like you've got that kind of holiday feeling, haven't you, when you go to when all the exhibitors are away, they're away from home for a night, they're usually staying away, so you've got that kind of holiday feeling, and add some booze to it and things can happen. So hopefully
it ain't just carp anglers. I think that's just people in general, especially if they don't drink.
Like, uncaged for the night and you're out roaming.
I've been on the taxis and working a Mad Friday. Jeez.
Yeah, Mad Friday or Black-Eyed Friday, we used to call it. Yeah. The amount of black eyes at the end of it. I think it's officially Black Friday, isn't it? The last Friday before Christmas.
Before Christmas.
But yeah, Black-Eyed Friday, as it's known in Blackpool.
It was a good shift to work, though, because a lot of people, they didn't go out that regularly. They got really drunk and they weren't used to what taxi fares they had to pay. So, not saying they recommended it, but obviously... The more drunk they were, the more they got charged.
I mean, tell me about it. I spent 25 years as a DJ and in bands, and you know, when you perform at functions where there's a big, like, so when you're DJing in like a city centre place, you're generally DJing to people that go out every weekend, Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights, whatever, generally single people and the occasional birthday parties, hen do's and stuff like that. Well, there's certain days of the year when you've got people that don't go out. Like, they go out once a year, twice a year, and like Black Friday, you know, all the works go out. Generally over Christmas you get a lot of that, the occasional hen nights you do. But the thing is, if you're DJing to some of the venues I worked in, will like hold 1,000 people. So if you've got 2 or 3 hen nights in, the actual proportion of people that haven't been out much, like there might be a couple of people in each group, which is only like maybe 10 people out of 1,000. On Black Friday, you might have 20% of all the people out don't go out much. They're just not used to going out. What happens when you're a DJ, the people that don't go out much, they request all the songs from when they used to go out. So let's say they're now like 38. Everybody likes the songs from the era that they used to go out. So let's say they're going out years or 18 to 22 and then they got married. And I'm generally thinking about women here. Let's say they went out from 18 to 22 and then met somebody, got married, kids, and now they're 36 and going out for, their once yearly Christmas do or whatever it is. They want the songs from when they were 19 because that's the last thing they remember, and everything else is shit.
And then they get drunk, you don't play them, and then you get the abuse.
Yeah, or you play them and they're in the toilet and they're like, oh, can you just play it again? Listen, that song was so shit, I didn't want to play it in the first time. You've got no chance of me playing it again. That's extremely common. We could do a whole show on the life and times of a taxi driver and a DJ, because when you deal with drunk members of the public, there are lots of stories to be told, I guess. So maybe we'll save this for the Cartcast Late Night Special.
The explicit late night special.
Exactly.
To be run by solicitors before release.
Remember the Hollyoaks later, or whatever it was. The Cartcats later. Which is, drunken general public stories. The general. I don't know, I'm not going down that road.
A tangent, haven't we, again?
Yeah, I like our tangent, off tangent intros. I do like when we
should get back on track with your recent swinging another great big fishing.
Yes, I was fortunate enough, kind of because of the Nashgate show, but it was going to happen anyway. I think it just instigated it, or was a catalyst to make it happen, to definitely happen. So last time I was down at Kevin Nash's place, he likes the Carpcast. He says he's one of our biggest fans now. He gets them all downloaded. I think he's took a load to Antigua with him this week. He's on holiday. Lucky man. But he enjoys them, and it's a great vehicle for Kevin to get, because it's so relaxed, and where we chat with guests, it's generally when he gets interviewed there's a camera in front of him, and it's kind of a set topic, or whereas we can just chat on this. So he enjoys coming on the Carpcast, said that we could record him again, and the bonus of me driving 270 miles to Essex is that I get to fish for a few days while I go down there to meet him. And this time Kevin said that we could do some recording. He said we'd get some food and have a drink and get in a proper relaxed environment, which is what we did. He cooked me a fantastic dinner. He bakes the best spag bol I've ever had. And my missus is a pretty good cook, and I enjoy cooking myself. It's a quite creative culinary delight. I know this is alien to you, Mark, because it took me about 10 years to get you off the tins of pasta La Vista while you were fishing.
What was the old saying? Between the pasta La Vista and hot dogs? If it's in a tin, you don't eat it.
I guess with the age of the Ridge Monkeys, nobody eats out of tins anymore. We could go on a real tangent of food on the bank here. I mean, is the Ridge Monkey just not the best invention there's ever been for culinary carping?
It is the future. I know, so working in a tackle shop, the amount of Ridge Monkeys we sell, and especially on the online side of it, it's phenomenal. And I'm sure all the other shops are like that. And well, when we're at the Northern Show, the little carp cast stand we had was next but one to the Ridge Monkeys, and especially on the Saturday when the show was at its busiest, they were four and five deep, you know, for hours.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I got the new big one at our show, so I've got the small one and the big one. Small one's getting a bit well used now, so I had so much sausage fat on it. I mean, I use them in the house. They're so great for cooking stuff, especially frying sausages, bacon. I mean, they're amazing, but they just fry everything. So this week I actually got the idea off Joe Morgan on Carp TV, carp-tv.com, if you haven't don't already subscribe to that, but you should do, because it's great. If you like the Carp Cast, you'll certainly like Carp TV. It's like a visual version of us, kind of, with more features. But he does a Ridge Monkey feature, and he cooked mashed potato. So, you know, like the ready-made mash that, fresh mash that you just put in, it comes in a plastic tub and you bang it in the microwave for 5 minutes, that you get in Tesco's and supermarkets. You can get like the creamy mash, and you can get mash with all sorts of stuff in it. You can get the cold cannon mash and all sorts of different types. One of those in a big Ridge Monkey with a little bit of milk in it on a low heat, and it just comes out perfect. Just comes out really creamy mash. So I did pie, mash and beans, which is not a meal I ever thought, you know, I've been carp fishing a long, long time, and I've always enjoyed cooking on the bank and always had sort of decent food, as you will remember, even, 15 years ago from the Elstow days. You know, I used to cook curries every night, and I've always cooked decent food on the bank. I've never been a pot noodle type of person. Because you've got the time, and you might as well get into it. But anyway, I never thought I would eat what pie was it? I'm going to get technical on the pies as well. Now I know they cook really well. I mean, it cooks it perfectly, because when the Ridge Monkeys are closed, it's like an oven inside, except it grills both sides. I mean, if you just put a pie in a pan, it just goes soggy. You know, even if you put a lid on it, it'd go soggy. But there's something about the way the Ridge Monkeys work, is it actually toasts like the top and bottom, so the pastry goes hard instead of soggy, and obviously it heats it right through, because it works kind of like an oven when it's sealed. Same for the mashed potato. Pie, mash and beans cooked perfectly is not a meal I would ever thought I would eat on the bank, unless somebody went to the chippy.
One of the things I've been thinking of, especially for the season, and not just fishing but life in general, is, you know, changing my diet quite a lot. You know, it mainly comes from listening to Joe Rogan's podcast and all the people they have on there. But I have spent my life eating burgers and shit on the bank, in the house, and everywhere. And, you know, I'm getting to that age now, you're getting to 40, where you have an ache and pain, and it lasts a bit longer than what it used to. So it's the old saying, you are what you eat, and you'll give your body the right fuel, and it works better for you. You optimise your system.
Nothing is truer. We need proteins and minerals and a balance of everything. I probably, like you, probably don't eat as healthy as I could do at home, but I do. I do supplements with. I take all sorts of tablets for playing poker and stuff. Take like nootropics. It's kind of like brain tablets that have good stuff in. So I know where most people say vitamins are expensive, which is generally what they are, because your body passes through all the stuff that it doesn't need. But if you don't live a completely balanced lifestyle, or you have vices, then vitamins are a good way of kind of balancing stuff. But nothing better than a pure diet. And I think when some people eat on the bank, they're looking for like the easiest stuff. They'll buy a load of crap, you know, like bags of sweets, bars of chocolate,
pot noodles,
just easy stuff to grab. And I'm like, well, we're there 2 or 3 days. We've got plenty of time to cook, and it's not hard to cook on a bank. I mean, when I was really hardcore a few years back, fishing 3 nights a week. So I was on the bank 4 days, and I was at home working 3 days. The 3 days at home and the days that I'd eat ready meals and takeaways. And the three nights, 4 days on the bank is when I would eat properly. I'd have vegetables with every meal. You know, I'd have 3 meals a day. I mean, quite often now with my lifestyle, the first food that touches my lips sometimes is 6 o'clock in the evening. You know, I got up at lunchtime, and if I've been playing poker late at night or whatever, I've got up late. You know, I've run about doing a load of jobs before everything shuts, and post office and doing all the stuff that you have to do. And then I'll be hungry, like starving, but I just won't get a chance to eat. And then it's like 6 o'clock and I'll eat, and then get hungry again, you know, like 10, 11 o'clock at night. So you end up eating late. It's not a very balanced lifestyle. But when you're on the bank, you know, you're getting up at first light. I have a routine. You know, I'll have some cereal and milk at first light, like Weetabix or something. And then, 10, 11 o'clock, you have like a bacon sausage butty, something like that. Or sometimes a full plate, a scran, as we call it. A bit of everything, beans, egg, and whatever. And then that sees you through the day then, and normally cook something nice in the evening, which is generally, you know, something with veg or a curry or chili or something like that. That's about as healthy as it gets for me.
Goodness, since I've got the Ridge Monk, it's butterfly a couple of chicken breasts at home and have them in like a Tupperware tub, marinating in a bit of olive oil and seasoning and what have you. They're quite nice, and you do them in a sandwich in the Ridge Monk, a bit of lettuce or whatever else you fancy, and don't forget the reggae sauce.
Yeah, you like your reggae.
Oh, without a doubt. But my big problem is I've got a sweet tooth. Now, I remember I was driving down to the lake a while back. I'll tell you when it was. It was just after we'd chatted to Julian Cundiff. I think he mentioned about, a healthy lifestyle a bit in his interview as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
And with that in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm gonna call in another way. I'm gonna get some fruit. Anyway, I went down the wrong aisle and got a trifle instead. Which was quite nice.
Yeah, it's not too much good in trifles, even fruit trifle. I mean, sugar's really bad for you.
Sugar is, it just feeds everything bad.
It's really bad. I mean, the more I look in, the more documentaries I watch, the more sort of, you know, when you get as old as us, you start taking notice of this stuff. If you're a young'un listening to this, then take our advice. Sugar is really bad, possibly one of the worst drugs there is. It's addictive. And it's just not good for us. You Google sugar and look into it properly, it's really bad, cancer causing. It's the addictive properties of it. I mean, there's sugar in everything. I eat savoury stuff now and cannot believe how much sugar is in it. I ate something the other day, I was like, this is full of sugar. And it was something, you know, it was like something I was having it as an evening meal type thing. Yeah, I forget what it was now, but even stuff like baked beans and that, full of sugar. It might even have been beans actually. But when you like, because I go through stages where I try and cut down like sweet stuff. I got sweet stuff too. I mean, sticky toffee pudding is just heaven. God knows how many times a week I have a sticky toffee pudding, but if I see one in a restaurant or wherever, I've got to taste it because it's my favourite. I've got to see, you know, I'm on the hunt for the best ever sticky toffee pudding. But it's like, you know, when I can quite often not have anything sweet, like sweets, chocolates, desserts, anything like that. I regularly go a week or more without it. And then you start noticing how much sugar's in normal stuff when you're not, you know, when you're not tasting it every day, because it's an addictive thing. Anyway, we've got onto this from talking about Kevin cooking me an amazing spaghetti bolognese, which he did.
I'm just thinking, why do I bother doing a planner every week?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the beauty of having our piece. So yeah, I've gone down there. I've been fortunate enough to get on the Cops Leg again before Kevin went on holiday. And I didn't catch a 50 in 5 minutes, unfortunately. Spoiler alert. It took me about, it was the next morning after the first day. And it didn't actually weigh 50 pounds. It weighed 48.7. But it was one of the 50s that Kevin caught when he braced two 50s on his DVD called The Final Account, which is great if you haven't seen it. He braced two 50s off the top. It was the pretty one of those two fish that I had. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite two for two 50s from there, but it was a fantastic fish. I had two other fish and lost one as well. It's possible I lost two. I had another take. I think the lead came off on the take. Something had definitely happened. I was fishing up against an island, so the bites were drop backs. And I had a few bleeps. Went round to investigate the rod. The bobbin was slacker than it started, so I knew the lead had moved. I was about to pick the rod up, and then Kevin had come down to visit me on the lake, so I went round to chat to him. Chatted to him for like half an hour. It didn't beep again. When he went, I went back and redid the rod, and the lead was gone off the lead clip, and the blowback tubing was blown right back to the eye. So I'd definitely been done. Whether it was because the lead came off too easy, I sometimes don't always push the rubber on. I like using the Nash weed clips because I want the lead to come off fairly easy. When you're fishing for big fish like that, I don't want the lead to ever have a chance of costing me, you know, what might be a fish of a lifetime. So I'd rather make sure I'm losing the lead rather than risk anything. Whereas, you know, I'm fishing a 20s water, you know, I'll try and make sure that I don't lose the lead. I push the rubber on hard. But if I'm fishing big fish waters where, you know, the next bite could be a fish you definitely don't want to lose, I'll make sure the lead comes off. But I might have just set it a bit too easy, because I think it's probably actually cost me the fish with the lead coming off. I mean, it could have been a duck. Could have been a duck that I didn't notice, but probably not, because I did get three bites off that rod.
So the what I'm thinking is, the Emperor's coming to your swim. It's picked up your nice tasty hook bait, it's pricked itself, it shook its head, your lead's come off, and it's a clever fish, it's not bolted. So when you thought, I'm not going to pick this rod up, there's a good chance that fish was actually hooked, or at least pricked. Yeah. And it's sat there just sucking and blowing, trying to spit the hook instead of bolting. And you've thought, I'm going on to talk to Kevin. It's got away.
Yeah, no, I think it'd already gone when I stood by the rod waiting for, because like, even the slightest beep, I would have picked the rod up there and then. But I think a combination of the lead probably coming off a bit easy and the fish swimming towards me, as they all the bites did off that rod. I think a combination of it all lent into it getting off. You know, just hope it was one of the commons that had bred in there. I mean, two commons that I had, or anything, you know, under like £35 in there has never been caught before, because it wouldn't be in there if it had been caught. It would have been took out and put in the office lake or one of the other lakes. And there's been, I know Alan Blair's took maybe 20 commons out over the last 12 months. They can't believe how many are in there, because they don't really breed well in the church, but in the Cops, for some reason, they breed every year, you know, and survive. So these commons are generally got, you know, they're quite stocky with a real gut on them. And the second one I had was like that. I didn't weigh it, but it was like 18-20 pounds, something like that. And then certainly fish that's bred in there, because it, like I say, would have gone if it had been caught before. Fish that haven't been caught before, they act weird, you know, on the fight. Have you ever caught? I've had a few fish over the years that, you know, never been fished for, or haven't been caught, and they just don't know what to do when you catch them. It's the first time they've had a hook in them. They panic and they do crazy things and they swim towards you and sideways and shake their head, and it's just a weird fight. Like a red. And they, anyway, I've had a, it's probably a third or fourth comment I've had out of that lake now, all on caught fish. But the first of the two commons that I landed was certainly child of either the emperor or the wood carving, as they call it. These fish are very long, like really, really long. And most of the commons that have been caught out of there are stocky with a belly, as was my second one. But this first one was a long one, really long. It just looked like a miniature version of that wood carving. The scales were perfect. It was just a fantastic looking carp. In fact, I'll throw a picture up on the Carpcast page. But it was a fantastic session. Again, a nice feed from Kev. We got 4 or 5 hours of material from him. We did have a few drinks, so I'll have to go through it and make sure that we don't say anything untoward. But one of the things Kevin did say on it, he defended some of the things that was, or he explained in his own words some of the stuff that, well, his opinions of the Nashgate thread last week that rocked the internet. Do you want to hear it now?
Yeah, let's listen.
When scope was first in my mind, I was leaving Nash and was going to start my own brand.
Yeah.
Because that was me rebelling. Rebelling is the wrong word, but it was about me wanting to go back to my roots. Yeah, and where it all gone wrong, you know, about massive amounts of gear that was all over padded and everything. I wanted to go back to the 80s where it went on my back, and if I didn't do it in one walk, you know, mm-hmm. I never had a bower.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, Joe, I've never used a bower.
Really?
Never used a bower, you know. Yeah, and scope was about me wanting to go back to my roots because I was just so uncomfortable with the gear I was being forced to design, yeah, and I was seriously gonna walk away from Nash and start this own niche brand, but yeah, that didn't make sense. So we brought it into Nash in the end.
In music, yeah. It works in the underground music, like in the dance music, it works the other way around. So you get a lot of very talented producers that make songs on the underground which don't make them rich, but they're really good tracks, you know, sort of stuff that are popular on the underground, but they don't make them rich, not rich enough to like be comfortable. And then they write a commercial song, and what they do is they make a pseudonym for the pop song. They release the pop song, they earn a load of dough, but they still remain their credibility as the underground guy. There is no reason why you can't do that with another name, whereas nobody knows it's you, but you're selling it. I mean, maybe it's different in the fact that with music it's released digitally, whereas you're going to have your reps going into a shop trying to sell products that everyone knows it's your rep. So I mean, maybe it's slightly different.
I couldn't do that. Yeah.
No, because you can't anonymously market a product.
That'd be kind of Dixie, just sell the gear for me. Yeah. The way the industry's structured now is harder to do that, but don't give a fuck. Yeah, I just need to break out of it, or I try to and can't. And this is what the lakes is about, Jamie. That's what the lakes is about. You know, the final thing I want to put, you know, on the map before I peg it. You know, everything I've learned, the passion I've got for carp fishing, but the passion I've diverted into the lakes to create fisheries with everything I've learned. Do not have to take a penny out of it because I'm sorted. So every penny we make can be invested into the next one, you know. And it's a benefit for anglers and it's a benefit for the company because we're creating more fisheries, so hopefully bring more people in, or at least keep them in. You know, it's a no-brainer.
I think Mark kind of summed it up in his own way on that last podcast that you must have listened to, when I've discussed, you know,
I've got opinionated about what's gone on. And Mark just summed it up really simply when, I don't know if I'll be able to afford it, but I'm looking forward to seeing all the pictures of happy people holding up fish. It's that simple. You're going to make a lot of people happy. Like, there are people that are going to, and they're going to catch a PB. And these are people that have just paid for the privilege. They're going to catch a PB. They're going to have a grin from ear to ear, and they're going to be ecstatic, having a really good experience. My personal selfish concern about the lakes is, from knowing my own thing, whatever anybody's opinion in of the lakes, the second they come here, they're going to have an opinion of, I have to come here every second I can possibly physically be on this property. I want to be here. Like, and anyone who comes here is going to feel like that, because that's how I felt every single time. The second I come here, and I'm privileged to do it, I think, how can I get back again really quick? And I've been here half a dozen times in 10 years. And every time I come, I have that same magical feeling. And I know that, I don't care if they pay $3,000 between them for a lake. When they come here, they're going to have that same feeling. And it's going to be booked up next year and the year after.
Do you think that can be maintained?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm heartened to hear that.
I've come here, you know, not every year. It's probably 3 years since I've fished here, since before this year. I know I've fished here a couple of times already this winter, but it's probably 3 years since the last session, and I've probably maybe fished it twice, and then probably 2 years before that. And every single time I've come, over 10 years, I'm like, I have to get back there.
Massive harm to hear that, yeah.
And I know these people will feel like this. Whatever they paid to come here, it's going to be worth doing again as soon as they possibly physically can. They're going to do it. And my personal selfish worry is, I'm going to pay to come back during a good time of year. I know maybe I can come and visit you in the winters and can probably get a chance to fish it. I understand that might be the case for the next few years. Fair enough. I want to come back in May. I want to fish here in September. Like, and I'm happy to pay whatever the going rate is to do that with a friend of mine, to come for a nice time, a productive time of year to catch these fish. And I know if I feel like that, and I only feel like that because I know what I'm getting for my money. I know that I'm fishing an exclusive, fantastic place that's magical. I know that everyone else that comes here and pays that is going to feel exactly the same as I feel. And I've fished here for nothing. And I know they're going to feel like that.
I'm heartened to hear that, Jamie. Yeah.
And that's my worry from a selfish point of view. I'm not going to be able to come and pay and fish here because everyone else is going to feel as passionate as I do.
You will be able to pay and fish it. If you,
I hope I get that diary first.
You still get that experience, and you said it. But my perspective of it is that I created the lakes. I had them on a relatively exclusive basis. But the point was, I could have had them on a non-angler basis and just fished them myself or Alan.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting point which I cannot understand myself, that you can't fish your own lake. And so what I learned was, the satisfaction for me was seeing other anglers catch my fish. I'm creating this fishery, I'm wanting to see these fish grow, I'm feeding them, but unless on the bank, I can't see the rewards, see how those fish have developed, and so I need to see them on the bank. And so it was massively important for me to see them on the bank, and the only way I could do that was to let anglers catch them. And so I loved seeing my fish on the bank and got the joy from seeing how those fish were developing. And the other side was seeing the joy that was for the anglers.
I get the impression, though, secretly, you don't have to let people fish here. You don't have to let people fish here. And they are your lakes.
Do have to let people fish
here. Do you truly want people fishing here?
Hang on. The point I'm trying to make is, there was no point in me creating an environment with huge carp if I can't see the carp. As a lake owner, I do not understand why, but a lake owner doesn't want to catch his own fish. Me and Helen.
So I say, if you can't catch him, you're going to get a pleasure. Well, me and Helen
would be up to our neck in mud and silt and reeds, struggling to catch an unknown fish. You know, the big pit. You know, the best was going to be a 30. There's only 140 in there. You know,
and you own a lake that's got dozens of 50s.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a sad reflection that four of my 50s died. I never caught any of them because I never fished for them. Yeah,
it's the hunter, isn't it?
Whatever reason, I couldn't fish for them. And what's it all about if I don't see them? So I really enjoy seeing them being caught, and I love the buzz and the satisfaction of seeing other anglers catching them. Yeah, I'm just now moving to this unknown territory whereby I'm opening the lakes to give us a revenue source to plough into my new venture. Now I'm stepping away from Nashmore, my final venture.
Which is other fisheries.
Which is creating fisheries, data fisheries. Of my dream would be the same standard as a church, you know, which is an area carp fishing in England hasn't got to, you know. And the only risk is that I'm letting Mr. Joe Public onto my fisheries that have been my love and joy, and whether they are capable or able to understand the preciousness and the privilege they are having, and they were given the respect, that is the big risk. And we're going to have our little issues and traumas along the way. Yeah, that's why I've got a 24/5 bailiff on there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a case when you're dealing with the general public, especially, I mean, this is your property, it's your home, it's where you live, and that's a factor a lot of people maybe don't understand the personality in it. You know, these are your fish. You've nurtured, you know, you've planted the trees, you've dug the lakes, you've created the tracks, you've walked around them with your dog every day. It's very personal. I think one of the things of people like me coming here over the years,
my home, Jamie.
Exactly, it's your home. And when somebody like me comes and fishes here, I feel privileged to be invited. When somebody pays to come here, they've paid for something that they don't have privilege to because they paid for it. So, I mean, I'm hoping everybody respects it as I do through privilege.
Well, I hope. I run the lakes on a friend and favour basis, yeah, with the view that I would hope that everyone who come up knew it was a privilege, and thus, oh my God, I've got this massive privilege to fish this amazing place, you know, beautiful, respect it wherever, and understand, you know, what a great opportunity I had in life. Why should that be different if people pay? Well, for some, they might get that. Yeah, for others, well, I'm paying Nashie, yeah, he should be grateful I paid him.
That is some people's mentality.
That's
but look, being plain devil's advocate here, if you go to a restaurant and you pay a cheap price, you get slightly better than expected food for a cheap price, you walk out of there reasonably happy. If you pay over the odds and you get underperforming food, if you get that same above average food for cheap price, but you pay over the odds, you might have a little moan at the food, thinking that. Now, if you're used to eating very high-class food and you pay high-class money and the food is average, you're probably going to moan more than the guy that paid for cheap food and got cheap food. So, like, when money's involved, people do think differently. Like, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's that entitlement again. And if somebody pays more than they've ever paid for something, they're going to expect more. The difference is with the, I mean, I'm philosophizing. philosophizing? The difference is with these lakes is I don't think there's any summer money where people could be disappointed. The place is magical. I've always felt like that.
Jamie, where I have to disagree, from my experience at Cavanac, I'm in a massively dangerous area. Yeah, at Cavanac, I would suggest, created one of the best holiday venues in France in terms of they turned up off a plane, everything was there, the bivvy and everything. You know, even got to the point with some of them, we'd put the baits on the hook, run them out and put them in the spot. All they had to do was run out of the boot and hit it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Great food, great facilities. And we had anglers turn up. We had one angler turn up and he said he turned up with 100 DVDs. I was there that week, right? He was in his bivvy the whole week watching DVDs. I think I saw him come out twice. He then went on media, and slagged off the venue because he never caught. And that's what I observed about Cavanagh or any holiday lake. Yeah. You can put the best facilities on in the world, but if the angler hasn't got the ability or the desire or whatever to catch, he can just slag it off.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Yeah. You've got up the church and cops, a guy, and this is why I've been worried about pitching the rates right.
Because some people are going to blank.
You've proved that if you have the ability, you've been there, five nights?
5 nights in total, yeah.
Five nights in winter, and you've had
four fish.
And lost another one. Yeah, you've had a 50. You've had another one that is a 50 in the spring. Winter weight, you had it at 48. Unbelievable. But that's because you're an angler and you fish for it. Yeah. The reality is that a large percentage of them are going to turn up with the dough, but because they're not able or they're going to focus properly, they're going to blank. And who's going to be at fault there? It won't be them. It's going to be me.
I blanked on the church one time in winter when it froze on me, to be fair. Probably the only time I have blanked on there, but I have seen other people blank on there. But the fact is I've still enjoyed it because there's something about this place from the personal touch you've put on it. You know, the trees, the environment, the lodge, the welcome you get when you come here. The fact people are going to turn up here and meet Kevin Nash, even when they blank. I mean, all right, you may not be here every week, you may be on holiday, whatever, but at the end of the day, it's still an experience. Much the same as somebody might like going to Drayton Manor, to a theme park.
Perhaps I've about this. Perhaps I've been damaged too much by all those green-eyed monsters out there, but I'm very afraid that I'm offing what I believe is an amazing situation, environment, an opportunity, but when they put money on the table, because they do not have the ability, they're going to criticise.
From an objective point of view, yes, when you pay money for something as opposed to get it free, there is an expectation. But I think the expectation is here even before they catch a fish, right? They're going to fish in a special place. That is magical. There is something about the way you've created this lake, your personal touch. I mean, you're a designer, you're a creator, you're an innovator, and you can feel that in the lakes. As I've said before, from the trees, from the plantation, from the shape of the lakes, from the features, and from the fish that are in there. And even the guys at Blank, they're going to wear 50s knotting out in front of them. They're going to you're going to be close.
I haven't opened it yet, and look at the angster we're receiving.
No, I think knockers are always going to knock, right? There is no possible price methodology of way. I mean, I said in a post.
Come on, this has been the biggest thing in the cart scene recently. Where did that?
Of course, it has. Yeah,
I was only trying to open my legs to everyone so we can create more day tickets. And I'm the biggest boss on the planet now, apparently.
Don't know about that. I mean, do you remember I sent you a text on Friday from a friend of mine who's not a fisherman, right? He sent me a text saying, I can't understand what people are moaning about. This guy has been inspired to listen to, he's a non-fisherman, right? He's been inspired to listen because our Carpcast this week said my views on Nashgate. I know you've listened to it today. He sent me a text this afternoon saying, Ben, man, this guy doesn't fish. He's it's because of what happened last week and our conversations, and he explained the analogy about fishing Lytham, Royal Lytham Golf Club. He went, I can't believe people are saying that. You know, this guy's created a lake. I don't know how good or bad it is, but like, I wouldn't go complaining to Royal Lytham Golf Club because I can't afford to go and play a round of golf there. You know, Tiger Woods plays there. It's held the Masters numerous times. Like, I don't have the right to automatically have a membership for that place. Anyway, he sent me a text this afternoon saying, I listened to the first hour of the latest Carpcast. This guy's not a fisherman. He wanted to find out more on the debate.
That's interesting.
He went, had a chuckle to myself about the Royal Lytham reference. That's because it was him that referenced it. Interesting listening. I know fuck all about it, but I think you've hit the nail on the head.
I think you did hit it on the head, Jane. Yeah, and you talked about entitlement.
Nobody's entitled to walk onto your property and your house and fish your lake.
About the whole point, rather than whinge about people that have got it, get off your arse and get it yourself. You know, when I say things like that, I touch on it and I'm frustrated by those people who say to me, oh, I could never, just get off your arse, achieve.
The problem is when you say it, you're a made man, you're a guy that's won, that's got the A+.
And I've got to say, what kicked this off was my Facebook post where I said, stinking rich, and those who have heard whatever I said, I walked in the office after being away for 3 days, and I think this is the second or third time where I've messed up. I walked in the office and they're saying to me, it's all kicked off, blah, blah, in this case they put the auction up and there's all this ridiculous stuff coming, and out of frustration I reacted. But the comments I made that cause all the fuss,
the get on in life, the get rich,
I just quoted what was on there, and I put a question mark on the end. Yeah, it wasn't my comments, I was just quoting.
That's the bit that people missed. When you said about it's only for the people that have got on in life,
stinking rich,
you didn't, stinking rich, you didn't say that. You were repeating one of the 500 and something comments.
Out of frustration, what the hell are you lot on about?
That's something that I know I missed at the time. The irony in that is that they weren't your words. No. Somebody else said those words. If you choose, I think there's over 650 comments on that post currently. If you choose to read through them all, you highlighted, maybe you didn't put quotation marks around those exact words. So anybody that took that post you made out of context without reading all the other posts would have thought you were just saying, well, if you get on in life, if you're stinking rich, then come and pay me some money. Whereas you were quoting things other people have said, oh, if you're stinking rich, you'll be able to fish there. If you've got on in life, you can fish there, and everyone else, fuck you. Like, you were highlighting things other people have said.
I look down on nobody. If I had an observation, I just sometimes feel very frustrated that people do not maximise on their life. They do not understand that if they looked at life in a more positive way, in a different perspective, become a bit more driven and focused, they could make a lot more of their life.
Be happier.
That's up to them, but it's a point that they just moan and whinge about their lives. Yeah, that's up to them, but don't try and turn that against those who are trying to make something of their lives. I spend so much of my time and have done for 30, 40 years in mentoring people, kids in particular, about getting focused, and make it happen for yourself, Yeah, we were talking about Warnwell earlier. I took 2 12-year-olds under my wing at Warnwell. They're now adults and they've made a great success of their lives. Both of those two could have been scallywags, they could be in prison now. I engaged them because I saw in them how I was and could have been, and what fishing had done for me and turned me around. You know, I spent my life trying to help, guide and push people to fulfill, you know, their capability. And yeah, I know, you know, most people who, when they get that, can fulfill their capability. So
I think some people need positivity. Sometimes people are born into a less fortunate situation and they think the world's against them. And yes, if nothing else, like, you can make something.
And that's my frustration, that, you know, that so many people on this
big You don't down. Have to be beaten before you start. You don't have no, to be.
Yeah. Positive thinking, belief in yourself, yeah. And you can make anything happen. Yeah, you can make anything happen. Oh, I can never fish now. She's like, yeah, I'm an adult. Yeah, I'm never going to get a job. Yeah, I can never be rich and privileged. Well, hang on. Turn that around. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone on the dole expects to be able to buy a Ferrari. I don't think anyone on the dole expects to be able to fish a Euro rack that costs $2,500 a week.
Ferrari.
No, I've never had one.
There's some things beyond our reach.
This is what I said about some of the things I said
be
on the last...
Be comfortable in your own body and, you know, be comfortable in your own body. Yeah.
And as I said, I mean, a week on the cops, which is dearer than the church because it's got more big fish in, even though the church is a fantastic lake. A week on the cops is probably going to cost you less than a few months' cigarettes. I mean, that is a sacrifice anyone can make if they really were hungry to fish. You know, and forget all the other things you do in your life. It is achievable, and it's not like you have to succeed to achieve it. Like, you know, anybody that goes to France once a year, it's going to be the price of a French holiday. And there are a lot of French holidays that cost more than £1,000 a week. And the cops is not going to be £1,000 a week.
I got married at a company where I was 19 or 20. Yeah. I was still on apprenticeship. Yeah. We had a house. The only heating was a gas fire in the lounge. Yeah. That was a really bad winter. We had a slate tiled roof and it wasn't felt underneath. I remember waking up one night feeling water drift on my nose. Been a snow blizzard that night and it had blown all underneath the slate tiles. The loft was 6 inches thick in snow, which started melting,
dripping into your face,
the ceiling, you know. And I had to get out there with a brush and dustpan, you know, and sweep it all up, you know. In the mornings it'd be a thing of jump out of bed, dash downstairs, and I'd have my clothes in my hands, trying to put them in front of the gas fire to warm them slightly before I put them on, you know, damp and steaming. Yeah, that's how it was for me. You know, we didn't have, we had a black and white TV, second hand, the sofa second hand, and it had these rubber straps. Yeah, you sit on it and bong, bong, you fall through it. Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is that, you know, I had nothing, we had nothing, but we made the most of what we had, you know, and then we went on, you know, and just, you know, just wanted to have more and achieve more. And the only way that happened was by sheer hard work. But while this is all going on, I'm a carp fisherman, yeah, and I was actually spending more on bait. This is the time of the promoting baits, yeah? You know, my wife, bless her, yeah. This is the life she was giving, she was getting, yeah? While I'm spending all our money in buying bait.
Going fishing.
To go fishing, you know? And in those days, I wouldn't like to say, but I bet my spend on bait was 4, 5, 6 times more than my spend on tackle. Yeah. Now, you know, they all want the best rods and whatever. You know, whereas, you know, now, it wouldn't be any different. I'd be spending that money where I need to make a difference. If it meant I starve the kids and We'd have a house with a slate roof and snow coming in and a gas fire to get on the cops and catch that 50. That's what I'd do. That's what I would do.
I've had a not dissimilar situation this year at 43 years old, somebody that's worked all his life. I was in the bottom of the financial pit that I've ever been in my whole life. I was in a position of having the boiler break in winter and having no money. And coming out of probably the most difficult financial period of my life, even though it was getting better, I still didn't have the 1,500 quid to buy a boiler. And I sat there, the same thing, with frost on the inside of the windows, with coppering up to buy food on a daily basis, with a young daughter. And I was happy because, you know, I had my girlfriend and, like, we were pretty tight and life could be a lot worse than I'm sure a lot of people have a worse life than what I had. But I'm 43 years old. I'm fishing the Copse Lake and people have said to me, you know, oh, you're privileged. You've been entitled to fish there. Nobody else is going to get to fish there. And, you know, people have had a go at me in the last 2 weeks for being in this position. And 2 months ago, I had frost dripping in on me, you know, in bed, and I was getting up to a damp house every single day. We've all had hard times, we've all had good times, but the fact is to think that I can't sum it up in a way that doesn't sound like I'm a dickhead, but some of the comments that I saw about people thinking that, you know, I'll never be able to afford that. One, I don't think it's going to be expensive that you'll never be able to afford that. I think everybody, if that was their ambition to fish the Church Lake, they could. I don't think it's past anybody's dreams at all. I don't even think it's a dream. I think it's going to be priced so that anybody who wanted to, like I say, give up smoking for 6 months, don't go into McDonald's for the next 6 months. You could probably afford to fish the Church Lake.
With the exception of people who are truly, you know, down in luck from disabling or whatever, yeah, that's a fair call. Other than people who really do have more crap than they deserved in life. Yeah. If you've got two legs, two arms, yeah, and you're healthy, yeah, quite simply you could fix the cops or a church.
I've always said,
if the business went tomorrow, I wouldn't starve. I'd go down Southend Beach and dig ragworm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for example. Or I'll go and wash cars. And that's the point. Yeah.
It's having a working mentality.
It's having a working ethic and understanding that society doesn't owe you a living. Yeah, I would never, ever go on the dole.
Yeah.
I would always find a way out of pride to make my own way. I've never, ever been out of work. I've never chucked in a job without another job to go to. Yeah, and yeah, I've been working class like everyone else, yeah. And I've never had a day where I didn't earn my money. And I know there never would be a day, providing I am fit, where I wouldn't earn my money. I would never dream of wanting to pounce off society.
Yeah. You made a good example there about the ragworm on the beach. I live near Morecambe. At any one time on Morecambe Beach, there's £1 million worth of cockles. Do you know that? On any day of the week, there's £1 million sat there for anybody that wants to go and dig it.
Mad.
It's there. Like, and now, don't get me wrong, there's organised gangs and all sorts that dig those cockles. You remember many years ago on the news, the Chinese, where about 50 of them died in one day when the tide came in. That was an organised gang running the beach. But the fact is, this is in our land, on a free bit of space that anybody's entitled to walk on. There's £1 million sat there that you could go and get. It might take you a year to get them all, but the end of the day, it's there. And like you said, you can go and dig ragworm on your local beach to make a living if you
have
to.
Funny story, Jamie.
There's money there.
Funny story, Jamie. You know, I was writing, shipping money in assemblies, you know. A lot of people, unless they're as old as me, won't understand this, but yeah, we were sitting there with 4.5% mortgage, whatever. You know, this, you know, say, be my first young bride, wife, and the world went to rat shit and the mortgage rate went up to 15%. You know, I was £200 a month negative on my mortgage. I was working engineering all day long and then moonlighting. So I was coming home, having my dinner, you know, get on a moped. Can you imagine me on a moped, drive into this shed and moonlight at night for this guy. It's freezing cold, literally a shed, you know, work until 2-3 o'clock in the morning on a lathe, you know, just to try and make ends meet. But anyway, cut long story short, things moved on and I found this salvage yard who were buying fire distress stock or whatever, right? And I spotted all these tins of tomatoes in there, well, you know, which had been, you know, the factory had been burned down, all the labourers were burned. So I was buying all these tins of tomatoes for 2 pence, yeah, and selling them for 5 pence. And they had this Ribena, bottles of Ribena. And I've never seen bottles this big to this day. It was like 2 litre bottles. God knows, I've been conning them. So I was buying these bottles of Ribena for 20 pence. And word got out around Rayleigh. And I used to have a queue of people to my doorstep wanting to buy the tin tomatoes off me for 5 pence. And what it was a pregnant mother's, you know, word got out about pregnant mothers. Pregnant mothers obviously have Ribena for kids. Yeah. I used to have zillions of pregnant mothers turn up. Are you the bloke selling Ribena? Yeah, buying his Ribena off me for 25 pence. Yeah, but the point I'm making, the things you do when you've got to survive. If you've got that.
You've got to have that mindset. I think.
I've got to survive.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, I will survive. Whether I have to dig worms, clean cars, sell Ribena or tins of tomatoes, I will survive.
There was to sum that up nicely, there was a guy when I was 17. He was well known in all the local nightclubs. He was maybe 50, 60 years old. He wore a black suit and a red dicky bow tie and a white shirt in the nightclubs to all those kids. And he was 60 years old. He always had 2 young birds on his arm, one on each side. And he was like a local icon, celebrity type guy. And he owned a company called Heliair that rented helicopters to the rich. And I seen him in the local pub many times, and being a keen person to get on in life, you know, I used to question him, I used to grill him, like, what do you do? How do you do it? Fucking hell, you're 60 years old, you've got 2 young birds on your arm and you're dripping in money. What is it? Tell me the secret. And he went, the secret is a telephone. I went, what? He went, all you need to make money in this world is a telephone. That's it. You don't need anything else. You don't need any assets. You find something people want. You find the cheapest plants to buy it. If it's tomatoes at 2p, you find somebody to sell it for 5p, and you ring, you buy it off him and sell it to him. And he said, that is the secret to being rich. Find something people want, sell it to somebody else for a bit more. That's it. I mean, that is not
as simple as that.
You have to have that mindset. Like, obviously he was somebody who had that mindset, and I was somebody who was hungry for it, and it stayed with me for 30 odd years. It is that simple. It's never been that simple for me, but I mean, it's kind of what you've just said there with your tomatoes.
But sadly, you know, what this opening the cops and church has really highlighted is the number of people who have given up, beating themselves up, or don't realise there's another way. And I think that is what frustrated me and upsets me the most, because, you know, I've said so many times that everyone has a talent. Yeah, you know, I believe everyone in this world can thrive. I think the big thing for me, and maybe what was my reasoning, that thing behind that poise post, was my frustration about so many people don't get how they can thrive in this world. And you know, that upsets me. You know, they've given up, or they've given up before they started. You know,
not everybody's an entrepreneur.
I'm not saying everyone is an entrepreneur, but you know, I think so much goes back to parenting. You know, and from that, you know, we have all these people, well, you know, I haven't got a chance in life, you know, I'll never be able to have what you have, you know, and, that's how they feel. And that upsets me, because I believe they don't need to feel like that. You know, if they could just understand, if they had the guidance, the mentoring, the right teachers or whatever, they wouldn't be in that place to be able to say, I'll never be able to fish Nashies, you know. They can immediately dismissed it.
I think it's more general than that as well. I mean, I was unskilled as a kid, as all kids are, and I had the shittiest paper round on the round. It was the one nobody wanted, which is why I got it. I had to ride 5-6 miles a day, 7 days a week, for all conditions, to deliver the heaviest bag of papers on the round, because I lived in the country and the houses were all over the place, and it gave me enough money for a bag of Richard Boilies. But I did it for that bag of Richard Boilies because I could fish for a week on them. I could fish 5 nights a week after school every day, and Friday That's night the weekend. Point. And you. I was unskilled, and I still found something to do. What I needed it to do.
Exactly, it's my point. You got a paper round. These kind of people I'm talking about would never get a paper round.
Yeah, it was, and it was the only paper round on offer. There was loads better. Mine was the shittiest one that nobody wanted, which is why I got the job, because nobody wanted it. I walked into a busy news agent, have you got any jobs? Yeah, we got this one that comes up every 2 weeks because everyone gives it up. I'd done it for 2 years. Mm. I remember one day, it was waist deep in snow, and I still got to every single house holding my bike above my head. I had a push bike that was held above my head. And when I got back, it took me 4.5 hours. I was late for school because once I was halfway around, I was stuck in the snow. And once I got back, the guy, I went, I've done them all, like feeling I was going to get a pat on the back. He went, why did you even bother? Why didn't you just come back? Mm. I went, because I thought I had to do them. I was scared as a kid that I had to do that job to get paid. And he couldn't believe it when I got back. He went, nobody expected the papers today. Why did you deliver them? And I still did. I thought I was going to get a pat on the back for doing it all. And he told me off.
Yeah, and all these people who, you know, just see me as, you know, massively rich. You know, I've made my money out of them buying my gear.
That did make me laugh.
Yeah, didn't it? Yeah, but yeah, you know, as I, you know, put in, you know, my first book. You know, at the age of 14, I was marking up papers. I was doing my paper round. Then I was going back and doing relief paper rounds for the paper boys that had been sick or then turned up. I worked in Tesco's 3 nights a week and Saturdays in a tackle shop.
Some people have a work ethic, some people don't.
I wasn't born with a silver spoon. Yeah, I never even got any bloody pocket money from your parents. My father actually did everything he could to talk me out of fishing. They wouldn't even buy me presents for Christmas or birthdays for fishing. He was so anti. I grafted from a low base. You know, so it does kind of upset me that, you know, it doesn't upset me that people knock me. It just upsets me that people don't get it and are green-eyed and jealous. You know, where if they only really understood, they could have the same or opportunities as me. Or at least, you know, make something of it, their lives. That's what upsets me.
So as you can tell, we'd had a few drinks by that point. It was about midnight, and we'd been sat there from 5:30 chatting, drinking and recording. So there was a few brandies had gone down by then, which is Kevin's favourite tipple. If you want to send him a bottle, I'm sure he'd be appreciative. So it was a fantastic trip down there. It's interesting what Kev says, you know, some of those things that people thought were extremely harsh that he'd said, he'd actually used other people's language in the thread, but obviously the thread was 600 posts long, so if you hadn't read every single post, you wouldn't have known that. So I mean, it was kind of took out of context, but anyway, it's water under the bridge now, as I think most people who've got half a brain, their opinion is that his lakes, market forces decide what they're worth, and you know, we live in a capitalist economy. That's it. It's as simple as that. It's worth what it's worth, and it's up to him what he does with them. And all I can say is they're absolutely fantastic places, and I will be paying to go there, you know, to get a prime week in the year. It will replace a holiday. I'm not saying I would fish it, you know, week in, week out as a syndicate. It's holiday fishing, and the place is magical. So we'll have to work on getting you on there at some point next year, Mark. Basically, considering my knowledge of both the church and the cops, if anybody wants to bid for a week or book a normal week and they would like a guide, then Mark and I are both available. obviously, if you wish to give up one of the spaces on the Lake Hyre for one of us, you know, we'll make sure you have a good time.
I like your way of thinking.
We are available for free coaching on the church in the Cops Lake. You provide the lake, we'll turn up. How about that?
With rods.
Yes, yeah. Lots of rods. I tell you what was interesting on there, actually. I had the first common that I caught, which was the long one, I caught from about four rod lengths straight out in front of me, and it was a screamer. Now, it's the first screamer I've had on the R3 alarms. I don't know if you remember the R1s, RS1s. You had one of them, didn't you? Set of those,
yeah.
They had like a double beep, didn't they?
Yeah.
Take the Delkims, they have like a warble, don't they? And when you get a screamer, the warble changes pitch, doesn't it? Into like a slightly different tone, so you know when something's ripping. Well, any old school anglers that originally used optonics will know that the optonic had a series of beeps that sped up, obviously, as the fish speeds up. Or as you pull your bobbin, whatever. And when it gets to a certain point, it's a continuous tone. It's just like a beep. Now, there was something about that beep that makes you panic. Like, once it gets to the point of a single tone, you're like, you know, falling out your bivvy door, trying to rip the zips down, pulling your boots on while going headfirst into the lake. Like, oh, just picture panic. And it's something about that one tone that used to make that happen. That used to make, you know, like, in reality, the fish is moving like, well, you can't see my hand moving along at like half a mile an hour, but the fish is actually swimming quite slowly to give you that screamer. Now, lots of alarm, like, I haven't heard an alarm that has an absolutely continuous one tone since the optonics many years ago, and it just makes your heart race to the even higher degree than it normally does when you get a screamer. Anyway, the R3s do that, and it just reminded me of the old school optonics. And that first bite that I had, just one noted. I mean, that's where the saying one noter comes from, obviously, from the optonics. There's not many alarms that actually do one note these days. But my God, I was like a kid again, falling out the bivvy door when that first common ripped. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because it definitely makes you panic, but I guess it also makes you buzz pretty heavily. But you should get yourself a set of R3s, Mark. I really like them.
I'll be honest, I've been thinking about it, but I do love my little MMXRs, and while we're on the subject...
You can still hear the individual...
Phone.
You can still, even on that alarm you just played there, you can still hear the individual beeps even when it's screaming, whereas the one tone, it's just different. I don't know what it is about making you panic, but you know, I haven't panicked over a fish. I can be the guy that's like, it's chucking it down with rain and you're getting a screamer, I'm just like casually pulling my boots on and pulling my coat on and knowing the fish ain't going anywhere and it's actually running way slower than, you know, what the sound is telling you. But that's not what happened. It was like, ah, oh, shit. fell out the bivvy door head first.
Was it the alarm or the thought that there might be a good 50 or 60 on the end?
Well, when you get a screamer on that cop's like, I mean, when you get a run, you don't get a chance to think about what might be on the end. It's like, it's all a bit surreal, isn't it? I remember that first bite I had on Elstow 2 after 23 nights blanking, which is a long time. When you're doing 3 nights a week, like, it's a long time of nothing happening. And then I got that first bite. It's like, I've had it a few times, this feeling, when I fished a couple of lakes where we didn't really know there was fishing, like Colmere and Shropshire and stuff, like, where I didn't really ever expect to get a bite. And when you do get that bite, and on Elstow too, I got past that point of expecting a bite. You're expecting to blank every week when you went down. So when you do get a bite, it's a very surreal feeling of like disbelief, amazement, excitement, like everything all in one. But I don't know, it's weird. Have you ever felt like that anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned like your first bites on places, you know, these like rock hard waters. It just reminded me of first bite from the lagoon on St Ives.
Oh yeah, that was a similar one.
I'd done 38 blank nights on there. I mean, it's not as if nothing was happening. You know, there's always, you know, something happening under that surface. You've just got to break the code. But this morning, I'm up to my knees in water. I'm taking a bit of Canadian off the lines that's, you know, drifted in. And then my third rod, which is slightly to the left, that gave me a take. It wasn't a screamer, because I was fishing a pretty tight clutch. It just kind of, like, pulled up and started shaking there. And I looked at it and did, like, a bit of a double take. Thought, what the hell's... Oh, my God, I've got a take. Wow.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, is it, when you get like two beeps and it tightens up and you see the rod tip going, so you know there's something there. I mean, it's not quite the same as when you're just out the blue, you're going, whee, and it's away, and you're just like, it's different, because when it just tightens up, you've got that, is it a bream, is it like, is there a fish on there, oh shit, yeah, the line stayed tight, you know, the rod tip's bending, like, so you kind of realise it's a fish. But it's all a bit of a slower process, as opposed to that first beep is just a one-toner. It's just like, wee! But yeah, if you want to have a heart attack every time you get a one-toner, then get a set of about threes. Generally, I've not used them tons since I've had them. I used them for a full session, had bites on them, had liners, had everything, and I really like them. I had to turn, if anything, they were too sensitive on the normal setting, like out the box setting, the most sensitive. They were really sensitive, which I guess is great if you're fishing a place where you need to be really sensitive. But the way they work, because they work on speed, I set them to the least sensitive. And then obviously any sudden movement makes them beep, and I don't see any reason to use them any different than the least sensitive setting, because any sudden movement and it beeps instantly, but there's zero beeps in between. You're you know, if there's nothing going on in your swim, you're getting a good night's sleep. I can recommend them. I like the tones. I like that one toner thingy on them, even if it did make me panic. The range on them was ridiculous. Really, really good. Way further than you should ever be off your rods, and they worked through all obstacles. I had a call of nature where I went to the toilet. I left Alan Blair by my rods, so it wasn't like the rods were unattended or anything. But I asked him to tweak the buzzers. So, I mean, how far away the toilets? The toilets are in the office at Nash's, probably a good, I know, 600 yards from the lake, through two doors. Like, so you go into the office, and it's like I think it's a staff room, and then at the back of the staff room there's another door where you go into the toilet. So I'm 600 yards away through two doors inside a building, and he tweaked him, and it worked perfect. So the range is way better than you would ever need. So yes, I recommend greatly. We're doing a competition, aren't we? A Carp Cast clothing competition. When I caught the big one last week, I had a Northern Angling Show hat on. I didn't take a Carp Cast hat, and lots of people commented on the video that we made. Did a Facebook Live video of the big one, and lots of people commented that I couldn't enter my own competition because I didn't have any Carp Cast clothing on. It's a bit of an open competition, isn't it, Mark? I mean, I don't know if you've got any views on this, but basically, send us a picture to your email address. What's your Carp Cast email?
It's mark@thecarpcast.com.
Yep, mark@thecarpcast.com. You can post it on any of our fan pages. The official Carp Cast fan page that Heapy Bob runs, you can post it there or post it on the Carp Cast page, although the Carp Cast page goes into a visitors post section, so it doesn't show up on the main page. So probably the official Carp Cast fan page is the best place to post it, but make sure you send it to mark@thecarpcast.com. and we want a picture anywhere, something interesting of you with an item of our clothing on, t-shirt, Carp Gods Giveth t-shirt, the hat, Carp Cast hat, or our hoodies. We've got some really high quality t-shirts and hoodies. You can get them all on our website, www.thecarpcast.com. There's a shop on there where you can buy all sorts of stuff. Send us a picture. You could be stood on the top of Everest. You could be on stage with Madonna. You could be have an extremely pretty fish in a surreal surroundings. I don't know. You could be in a carp fishing in Sweden and against an amazing backdrop. I don't know. There are no rules. The only rule is you have to be wearing an item of our clothing, and it's got to be interesting. And what we're going to do is give away a place on Kevin Nash's Royston Carp Lake on our carp casting social, where we are going with Alan Blair on ourselves on my birthday weekend in August, and we're going to give a place away free. You've got from now till August. When do you want to do the cut off date?
The social, mid-August. Yeah, it's about mid-August, the social. So what do you say, about, you know, till the end of July?
Yeah, 1st of August, cut-off date, because I can't think how many days are in July. It's 31, I'm looking at my calendar now. So yeah, 1st of August, entries in before the 1st of August. We'll give a place away on the social with myself and Mark. If you want to book places on that social, you can do so on our website, www.thecarpcast.com. I think there's a deposit button up there now where you can pay like half the money, and or you can just contact Mark and you'll sort of have some sort of payment with him, won't you?
I would. I've got all the information on my computer, and it's just a copy and paste job to send it all over, and like I've done with quite a few people already. And you know, the Cromwell one, the first one, is getting close. You looking forward to it?
Yeah, I can't wait for that. I can't wait to meet some of our listeners as well. Hopefully they'll come away with a few carp and certainly some extra info. We've got Julian Cundiff on the Cromwell one. I think there's still a couple of places left on that. If you go to our website, there is a full description of what you get on the social. But basically, you arrive at 12 o'clock on a Friday. We'll do a draw for swims. I think for the people that can't get away bang on 12 o'clock, I think we'll do the draw in numbers. So we'll number all the swims, and then you actually pick them out of the hat, so you can still turn up last and still get you know, the best peg, technically, rather than it being a watercraft draw.
The good thing is we're not filling the lake, so no one's going to be sat in a duff corner.
No, we're not going to fill the lake with any pegs that I deem to be less productive. I mean, Cromwell, every peg can do fish on its day. It's not super peggy, but there are four or five pegs with access to the middle of the lake that, you know, do consistently do fish. I mean, all the corners can do fish. I mean, every peg on the lake, I've seen good hits out of every peg, but we're taking out like probably the three or four worst pegs that I wouldn't want to go in. I mean, you know, you'll still be able to move in there if the fish do turn up there and somebody's not happy where they are. There will be pegs that you can move to because we're not filling the lake. And there's also the small lake at the back that's got a big double peg on it, which is guaranteed fish. So anyone that's really struggling, just wants to catch, then we can always move them onto the other lake, which is also really handy for the social, right by the car park. In fact, we might be resorting to a blank saver in that peg. But yeah, we might, if the weather's warm, we might even do a floater match in there or something. It's at the end of the day, there is somewhere where we can probably guarantee a bite if anyone's really struggling and really wants to catch. But generally, Julian Cundiff's going to be down there. You're going to arrive at 12 o'clock on the Friday. We'll do some sort of draw for swims. We're going to ring a takeaway for everybody on the Friday night at Cromwell. It's pretty good for takeaways. There's a decent kebab and pizza shop. There's an Indian and a Chinese, so got a choice of pretty much everything. This goes for all the socials as well, for the other ones, the Baden Hall, the Royston and Christchurch. We'll do the same thing anywhere that delivers. You know, obviously if one place hasn't got a kebab shop but it does have a Chinese, then we're probably going to be having Chinese. But we feed you on the Friday night with a takeaway. We're going to give you breakfast rolls, baps, balms, tea cakes, whatever you call them in your area. Sausage and bacon on the Saturday and Sunday morning. We'll give you breakfast. And then we've got Fired Up Barbecues, which is a fantastic setup that you can book yourself. www.firedupbarbecues.co.uk. They're going to come down. They set up like a canopy marquee thingy. They cook some great food. And we're going to have a load of beers. and a bit of a social on the Saturday evening, and breakfast again on the Sunday morning. We fish till about midday on the Sunday as well. So we feed your weekend, we give you some coaching. You can just come for the crack if you're not really interested in coaching, but hopefully you'll come away with something. Myself, Julian, Mark, or someone might just have a bit of knowledge for you that you didn't already have. And if you want, you know, a bit more coaching, we can do that. If you want some casting tuition, or Mark's a pretty good caster, aren't you, Mark? Got some big 13 footers.
Oh yes, I've got my since making the move up to 13 foot rods, it has it's made a noticeable difference, and I love them, and they will be there for everyone to gently cast. Gently cast, because I don't want them bust.
Yeah, definitely. So that's the script with all the socials. We've picked day ticket waters, we picked bigger fish day ticket waters that have got lumps in. So, you know, they might not be the easiest of waters to catch, but Cromwell's got approaching 1040s up to 48 currently, which, you know, is a fish called Rosie that is getting bigger and should be bigger in the spring when we're on there. Might even touch 50 pound. There's about 60 30s in there. Cromwell, you know, it's not the easiest day ticket lake in the country, but there's, when, you know, one in three fish is 30 plus, and they're all good 30s, the 30s in there, you know, 34s to 39s. Is a decent chance of catching a PB, depending on what your PB is. And there's, you know, some very large carp in there. Christchurch, 20 odd 40s in there, up to just below 50 pound, including 245 plus commons. Fantastic stock of late. Baden Hall's got fish to upper 40 as well, which we picked. And the Royston Lake is a little bit unknown. It's got a lot of fish in it. Is what we do know. Biggest fish that's been out recently is 39, but it hasn't been fished. It's only, you know, lads have thrown rods out when they've done a work party and stuff on there, because they're getting the lake ready for opening the 1st of September, and we've got exclusive access to it. So if you want to fish one of Nash's brand new lakes before anyone else really gets a chance to, then the Royston Social is the one for you. That's probably the one everybody wants to go on, don't they? But yeah, we've got Frank Warwick on the Christchurch one coming down to for some tips, advice and info. We've got Julian Cundiff on the Cromwell one, Alan Blair on the Royston one, and Terry Edmonds, famous caster, for casting coaching. If you want a proper casting coaching, it's going to cost you a couple hundred quid, in it, for a day's casting with somebody like Terry. And you can get that as part of the package, with your food, with fishing on the lake, with the social with us, and some casting coaching from Terry on the Baden Hall one. So check out our website for dates and details. It's on the Carpcast Facebook page as well. And they are booking up fast, so don't mess about. You can just put a deposit down to secure it. Mark can sort that out with you. You don't even have to speak to us. You can just do it on our website if you want. But yeah, get involved in the Carpcast socials.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.
At the Northern Show End, I saw down at Five Lakes were DNA Bates, who've supported the Carpcast for quite a long time, for which we are grateful. You can visit their website at dnabates.com. Use the offer code CARPCAST5 at the checkout, which you get 5% discount. And that goes for everything, including their post-free deals, which you can get a boilie of your choice, including 3K of matching pellets or stick mix, tub of pop-ups or wafters, 250ml of bait soak. They have 5K deals at $59.99, 10K deals at $94.99, 20K deals at $149.99, and a 50K deal... $320
quid, that'd be a good deal, wouldn't it? Yeah, 32 quid for 50 kilo boilies. There's probably a lot of sawdust in it, I would say, if anybody could sell a bait for that. But now we know DNA is absolute quality. You're going to be using it this year. A few of our good angler friends swear by it. Secret 7, the Nutter S, SLK, Ocean X, and brand new out now is the Switch, which looks really interesting. We had Jason on a few weeks ago talking about the Switch. They do other stuff as well, don't they, Mark?
Yeah, they do all sorts of stuff. And I know you like this one, the Zig Deal, which is a 2.5k of spod mix, a bottle of the sticky sweet, a pack of Fox Zigger liners. That's 30 quid post fee, or you can go large for £5 extra. And one of my favourites are Floro pop-ups. 5 tubs for 25 quid post free.
Yeah, if you want to know anything about Floro pop-ups, then just listen to the Frank Warwick interview. The single hook bait fishing chat on there proved to be one of our most popular podcasts, isn't it? Everybody's been raving about some of Frank's info from that.
It surprised a few people as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
He was including flavours.
Yeah, he was talking about really heavily flavoured pop-ups in a two-egg mix, putting like 70 mil or more of flavouring in with sweeteners into a two-egg mix. Yeah, it was mind-blowing. Go back to, is it 34, 33, Frank Warwick one?
It was...
4, I think. But yeah, you can get the DNA Base Flora pop-up deal. 5 tubs, 25 quid post-free. You get a discount off everything if you use the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout for the extra 5% discount on all their great deals. Anyway, they're all post-free, delivered to your door at www.dnabates.com. Get involved. I'm interested to see how you do this year, Mark. You might stop your blanking once you get on that.
Oh, I don't know. I'm actually aiming for consistency this year.
Yeah.
My one night a month of catching nothing. I'm actually going to do tuitions and I have to come up with the best excuse.
Yeah. You got a list of them in your tuition book.
I'm blaming the moon phase at the minute.
Let's move on to, it's not on the net, it was on the Northern Angling Show. It was something that I mentioned in passing straight after the show. There was when Matt Hayes and Mick Brown did their talk, I know it ruffled a few feathers of various people in the industry that were watching. I won't name their names because they're not here to speak for themselves, but I'm going to say the general consensus and what I thought. Now, Matt Hayes and Mick Brown, you know, great ambassadors for the sport. They've been around a long time. They've been promoting the sport on TV, generally to earn money. You know, that this is their job. Certainly, Matt Hayes, he is a, you know, he's a professional fisherman or media person. That's what he does for a living. Now, he made some comments on stage, basically rubbing down the modern angling scene. He said stuff like fishing's not cool, don't try and make it cool. He said recent TV programs and media, which I can only presume that he's having a pop at the likes of the Big Fish Off and kind of the Corder stuff, basically saying stop trying to make carp fishing cool or fishing cool. It's not cool, it's never going to be cool. Don't dress it up is what they're saying. And He said some other things to that effect, and I saw it as I read between the lines of it's sour grapes. Now he did one series recently. What was his most recent show? You probably don't know because I don't know how many people watched it. I don't think it's been recommissioned. We do know the Big Fish Off has been recommissioned, and they're already planning season 3. So straight away, the media disagrees with what he's saying. But it strikes me as, dare I say it, sour grapes. Fishing has moved on. I mean, the carp fishing's got extremely popular. I see regular pictures. I see posts on Facebook from girls saying stuff like, why is everybody on my friends list holding a fish as a profile picture? And you know, it's become more popular. Carp fishing is the cool side of fishing. It is extremely social. It is high tech with the equipment that we use. And even look at the clothing companies, the stuff that we wear now. We no longer wear, you know, raggedy old clothing from the Army and Navy store and stuff. You know, there are many, many decent clothing brands out there. You know, girls can buy fishing clothing in pink embroidered logos and stuff now. Some of them, there is some cool stuff out there that we wear on the bank, including the Carpcast clothing, obviously. But I don't see why it has to be this hobby that you're embarrassed to tell people of, you know. Is, I mean, carp fish, you know, I'm a carp angler, it's never going to be a decent chat up line, is it? Let's be honest. But it's also, it's so popular. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that doesn't know somebody that goes carp fishing these days. That, you know, the general public are aware of this thing called carp fishing, and it is quite a high-tech sport. It is, in my opinion, the greatest division of the angling options that you can choose. So why isn't it cool? And making it cool only helps the sport. It helps, you know, kids want to get into it. I mean, you know, if you're trying to convince a young 10, 11, 12 year old to get into something that's really uncool, like, how much easier is it going to be to get them into something that's, you know, all their mates are like, oh wow, you go fishing, so you use all those electronic alarms, and, you know, you don't look, yeah. I mean, when I was 12, 13 years old, the trendiest item of clothing you could wear was a wax jacket, which I can assure you was not very trendy. Bucket, you know, you picture the stereotype, you picture bucket hats with like flies, you know, like hooked into them. It wasn't cool. I believe it is now. And when somebody says something as strong as what Matt was saying, he said it on both days at the show, and he was basically being derogatory to the modern carp scene. Now, yes, there is some stuff that goes with the modern carp scene. You know, there's some maybe more unsavoury stuff, people that don't respect the kind of nature side of it, or, you know, the ones that go into the lake to be noisy, loud and drunk, whatever. I mean, obviously that is a downside to attracting different sorts of people. But at the end of the day, the more people fishing, the better it is for everybody. The better it is for companies, the better it is to grow the business, keeps people off the streets. It's just a good thing. So why would somebody be saying it's not cool, leave it as it is, it doesn't need touching, it ain't broke, it doesn't need fixing? I disagree quite strongly, and his opinions were so strong that it just sounded to me like sour grapes. Like, the fishing season, the fishing media especially, has moved on. You know, that you've got the fantastic, we'll do it in Worth a Look in a bit, but the Urban Eurobanks 2 has just come out with Alan Blair, and the new Nash DVD is out. It's 4 hours special, check it out on YouTube. We'll talk about that in a bit. But the editing and stuff that Winston does on that, and the other companies do it as well. Tracker release some really high quality content. Corda have always done, you know, they've always been at the top of the tree when it comes to sort of digital marketing. It's a good thing. It's moved on so much that I think some people feel left behind. And he was saying that mainstream TV is dead for fishing, which is just a lie. I mean, the Big Fish Off has been screened on ITV, is it ITV3 or ITV2? But terrestrial TV, it's been filmed on that, and I keep losing my thread. In fact, the rerun was actually on ITV, on the main ITV. It's been on ITV and ITV4. Now, Matt Hayes, they had a big bit in their talk each day at the Northern Angler Show that basically said fishing's dead on TV. Well, I think obviously the Ali Hamidi would disagree quite strongly with that. And he said the future of fishing is on pay-per-view stuff, like things like Vimeo and Netflix. It just so happens that that's where their latest stuff they've been filming is being showed, possibly because they can't get back on mainstream TV. I mean, no disrespect to Matt and Mick, the Great Rod Race and all the kind of Discovery Challenge TV stuff they did was brilliant. I've spent whole weekends watching it, 8 hours a day. When they do the reruns, they do fishing days, don't they? I don't know if you've got cable TV or anything, or you've seen that, but they, you know, quite often they're showing them from 9 a.m. till 8 p.m. every day, the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. And I've sat and watched them. They've done some fantastic stuff over the years. But to say that, right, that's because they're not doing it anymore, they're not doing the TV for whatever reason, you know, whether it's not been commissioned or whatever, and they're doing like private soul stuff, to say that, you know, fishing's not cool, it's kind of the way we say it is, you know, that this is how the industry's gone. It's pay-per-view, it's Vimeo, and oh, by the way, buy our stuff on Vimeo. I mean, that's just wrong. It's just sour grapes, I think. And move with the times. Fishing is cooler than it's ever been. Carp fishing especially. And the more mainstream it becomes, the better it is. And to just sit there and disregard it, I just didn't like it, and I know it upset a number of people who work within the industry, you know, people that are working hard to Rob Hughes interviewed Matt and Mick on the Saturday on stage as part of it, and Rob publicly took issue with them saying that. He tried to, you know, be as diplomatic as he normally is and play devil's advocate to them, and so much to the point of they asked me to not let Rob interview them on the Sunday. So I thought, okay, I'll interview them and I'll give them a hard time. And then when it came on the Sunday for them to do it, they went, yeah, we don't want interviewing, we'll just do it ourselves. So they took the opportunity away for me to publicly call them out on it, which is why I'm doing it here. I don't know. I mean, you see a lot on Facebook about old school anglers basically decrying modern angling. I mean, you must see that all the time, Mark.
Yeah, quite a few individuals come into mind with that sort of thing, and I say, you just say it's progression. You say either get with it or ignore it and do your own thing.
See, I don't think these people have the right to have that opinion. So let's look at this objectively. So you fished pre-Herrig. You're a guy that fished, as I did, just. I was very young, but yeah, I just fished pre-Herrig. First year or two of carping, we didn't have Herrigs. I'm sure some people did, just I didn't. And then we learnt it, or were shown it. But, like, I loved carp fishing from day one. You know, the second I hooked my first carp on float tackle, and then later on dedicated carp fishing ledgering tackle, I was hooked, right? So I was addicted to it. Not as many people did it then. I've done it for the next 35 years. Right, fine. But why do I have the right to have an opinion of, well, you know, all these people getting into the sport's bad for it, the lakes are busy, it's got dead commercialised, stuff's got more expensive, syndicates are more expensive, people are auctioning lakes, all the things that kind of go with it. Well, all that's happening is other people are getting as addicted to it as I did when I first did it. So just because I did it 35 years ago, why do I have the right to put down the modern scene when other people are just doing what I did years ago? You know, I don't own it because I did it before them. You know, a 15-year-old kid getting into carp fishing now and absolutely loving it, and which is what's happened. You know, there's more people fishing. There's more people carp fishing, certainly. I mean, it just shows you that with the amount of dedicated carp fishing manufacturers that are out there. When I was a kid, you had to adapt. You had to use, you know, the biggest hooks in the tackle shop. Right, what's the biggest hooks you've got? Oh, you've only got size 10s. Okay, I'll use them. You know, Dredden Super Specialist or whatever it was. You kind of had to make do with what was available. And, you know, once I've been fishing a few years, there was a couple of dedicated companies. We've spoken with Kevin Nash at length, you know, about inventing the first rucksack, inventing the first carp fishing, inventing the first rod bag where you could leave your rods made up. You know, the happy hooker stuff. Thing, you know, looking at a Hessian sack and deciding that would be good to retain fish. And there was, what's happened is now there's a demand. If there becomes a demand for a product now, if there's a new style of fishing, say like zigs or something, somebody will invent something that makes zig fishing easier. I mean, that never used to be the case. I mean, it's not too many years ago there wasn't a single dedicated carp reel on the market. The Shimano bait runners was some of the first ones. You remember the 6010s and the 8010s and stuff?
Yeah, it's not that old Triton C spins that came before those with the bait runners on.
Exactly, but look at the name, C spin. they weren't carp fishing reel. I mean, these companies, you know, the two biggest companies, Shimano and Daiwa, they do specifically make carp reels, but they've only been doing that for a few years. Generally, it was adapted sea reels that we used to get. I mean, you used to have to buy the bait runner conversion separate, if you remember, like the cap that goes on the top to actually turn it into a free spool. I mean, you had to buy them separate, and it's not very many years ago. So it's moved on, but I don't think you have the right to sit there and say, oh, it's not how it used to be, you know, back when I was a lad. And I'm thinking of a couple of specific people when I say this. These people that have been there, done it, have caught some fantastic fish, tremendous anglers, but are just very bitter about how carp fishing's gone. Well, all that's happening is there's more people discovering what you discovered 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, however old you are. But just because you did it 40 years ago doesn't mean you are the elite. You know, you have the... I think there's bitterness because a lot of things are on the play. We've got an internet now. If there's a big fish around, you don't have to be tapped into the, you know, the secret handshake brigade and, you know, get the info. You can just use Google and say, oh, that's where that 50 came from. Oh, look, I can get a ticket. I'm going to apply, put myself on the waiting list. Things are a lot easier to do some of the things that they used to do. And some of these guys that did it back in the day, you know, they were probably doing it for 20 pounders, and now it's, you know, you can, anybody can jump on a lake that's got a 40 pounder in it. Anybody. There's day ticket lakes all over the country with 40 pounders in. And I think it's a sour grapes. I think it's a general consensus from people that going a bit deeper. I think what's happened is these people were maybe extremely successful. They were the man of the moment. Back in the day, they were a big fish in a small pond. You know, sometimes very deservedly. Fantastic anglers, some of these people that I'm thinking of now. They're a big fish in a small pond. And what's happened? The pond is now very large. Their big fish, let's use an analogy. If they were a 30-pound carp in a carp full in a lake full of 10-pounders, they're now a 30-pound carp in a lake full of 50-pounders, where a 30-pound carp is nothing. And now maybe they were fantastic anglers, maybe they were pioneers of their day, but when they put these pictures up of a 28-pounder, which was an amazing fish from back in the day, it means nothing to people now, because there's millions of 28-pounders everywhere you go. I'm using an analogy and not sure if I'm explaining myself very well, but basically there's a little bit of sour grapes that some fantastic achievements that some of these people did are not strikingly great these days because of the access. Now the people that know, people like me, I know that it was a fantastic achievement that these guys have done, but it's like they have to prove themselves constantly in the media, you know. And the thing is, these people were quite often famous to the underground when it wasn't like the significant figures of their time. It was cool to be secret, if you know what I mean. Do you remember like the kind of secret carpers brigade? Like I said, the secret handshakes. There was certain people that were privy to the info, to where the big fish lived, to access. It was quite a small clique of people. And it was kind of cool to be the secret guy. Well, now fishing is so big, media-wise, there is money in it. I'm not saying you could ever live off it, but there's certainly, you know, there's competitions in magazines, there's consultancy deals, which there just wasn't back in the day because there wasn't any or many companies to give you a consultancy deal. Now there's loads of bait firms, clothing firms, tackle firms, there's loads. And I don't know, I think they kind of think they missed the boat. That now, you know, they were a big name when it was called to be unknown or only known to the select few and, you know, respected by a small group of peers. And now there's such a big market media circus, as it was, that I don't know, maybe there's a bit of regret there. Like, well, I did 10 times more than these guys are doing now and nobody knows about it. So I have to tell people on Facebook, I have to put all these cool pictures up and just basically slag off the modern scene. And then that's how I see it. I don't think I've explained myself very well, but I kind of think...
We all Yeah, I think we know what you're going at there, and I've got to be honest, I think a lot of it backfires. I mean, just going back to the Matt Hayes and that, I think it's do you think there's a bit of jealousy that as the number one on TV they've lost the spot to the likes of the Big Fish Off, to Jeremy Wade?
I think that's exactly what it is, and it made them look bad to anybody who's got half a brain who kind of knows the industry. It made them look bad by saying, TV's finished, you're wasting your time on TV, you guys trying to make it cool, you're flogging a dead horse, which is basically what they said, clearly having a go at the likes of Ali Hamidi and stuff. You know, you're flogging a dead horse, it's finished, the future's Vimeo. I mean, who's heard of Vimeo? Let's be honest. But that just happens to be where they're selling their latest thing that they've filmed. I mean, to slag off mainstream TV, I mean, the Big Fish Off, it was shown on ITV, it's on ITV4, it's been recommissioned for a new series. Yes, it's not a straight up fishing program, it's an entertainment program, but that's great. You know, if it makes a few kids think, fishing looks fun, and they get into it, then great. You know, our fishing show at the Northern Angler Show and the Five Lakes Show that's just been on this weekend that you went to, it was full of kids and families. I mean, that's brilliant. That's what we want. It's better for everybody. And yeah, the lakes are busier than they've ever been, but the lakes are already busy. And all that'll happen is new people dig lakes. You know, I mean, supply and demand. It's always been the case. There's still underground waters for you to go and find and search out and, you know, fish with your, you know, get info off the click. There's always new waters cropping up. You know, club waters that are throwing up a big fish that have been kept quiet in a certain area. There's still, there is still an underground of carp fishing. There's still a load of anglers that I'm aware of that the general public don't know that are fantastic anglers that always hunt out the big fish. You know, we're in the media and quite often when I get to hear about a lake now, it's too late. You know, the list is closed. I ain't ever getting on it. And, you know, I'm probably privy to info, or I'm certainly up there within, in the modern clique, I would describe it as. You know, I speak to people from tackle companies and field testers and, people that have got their ear to the ground that hear the info, and I'm still behind. So there is definitely, definitely still an underground of carp fishing, a load of people that are out there doing it that you would never see in the press. But the fact is, it's generally a good thing. The more people that get into fishing for a variety of reasons, the better it is. And to tell people, oh no, you're flogging a dead horse, it's gone, just because you're now not at the forefront anymore as maybe you once were, I mean, that is definitely sour grapes stroke jealousy. And we've generalised here, we started off with Matt Hayes and Mick Brown, but there's a few old school guys that have a whinge on Facebook that think you just don't have the right to go fishing if you didn't fish pre-Herrick, and that's just bullshit. You know, these people, they slag off the modern scene with stereotypes that just don't exist. I've seen them make posts about, oh, why would you want to go to a fishing show when, you know, it's just full of people dressed as trees. Like, did you see anyone dressed as a tree yesterday, Mark, at Five Lakes?
I didn't actually, but I did see, to your northern show, I did see at least one full camo fella. I told the wife to spot it. I said, look for people in camo.
So one guy, we had over 10,000 people at our show, maybe one guy. I know what people are referring to when they use a stereotype of the people dressed as trees at fishing show. There was a period about 10-12 years ago when the brand Realtree, which is an American camouflage brand, there was four different types, wasn't there, Realtree, like for different seasons of the year, that basically
leaves now.
Yeah, it's loads. Yeah. But basically that was kind of the latest trend in fishing clothing, because bear in mind, we hadn't had any cool fishing clothing ever. It was, you know, you were a green or a brown t-shirt and tracksuit bottoms or whatever. There wasn't much dedicated fishing clothing even then.
Army Surplus were the main supplier, I think.
Army Surplus, yeah. And this stuff came over from America. It was three times the price of a normal t-shirt just because it had that type of leaf pattern on it or whatever. There were people doing copies of it. But yeah, I did see a few shows where people were wearing Realtree clothing, and it was a stereotype. But one of the people that I'm thinking of specifically who made a post slagging shows off and people dressing trees, I remember seeing him in the press around that era wearing Realtree clothing. Like, he was one of the guys that got suckered into the real tree thing, same as everyone, same as a lot of people did. So not only is it a stereotype that doesn't exist anymore, it's a hypocrite. He then went on to slate fishing shows. Why would you want to go to a fishing show? This guy has a bait company. He sells bait. The picture that he made on the post slagging off the Northern Angling Show had machinery by one of the stands that was at our show. Boiling Design, which are a Dutch machinery maker for boiling making equipment, they were actually sat at our show while he sat there at home making his bait with one of their machines, slagging off people that go to shows. It was just the most hypocritical nonsense I've ever read. I mean, yeah, I get that you're a bit old school, I get that you don't want to jump into the rat race and, you know, sit behind a counter at a show full of people you don't really want to speak to that know a fraction of the knowledge that you know. I kind of get that opinion. But networking in any business is an extremely important thing. Go and sit at the bar, speak to a few old school guys, walk around the Boiling Design stand. You might have a new bit of equipment that makes your bait making job easier because you don't even know about it, because you won't go and look at, you know, you're so blinkered that you won't go and look at the new, you know, anything that's new out there because you're so old school. You might speak to one of the bulk food suppliers that supplies an ingredient that's slightly higher quality than you already get for slightly cheaper. How would you know if you just turn off to the things that you're actually involved in? You've got a bait company, you make bait. I'm talking about one specific person here, but I'm generalising about a number of people with the same opinion. It's an extremely blinkered, hypocritical point of view, and it's just an old man whinge you get. I mean, I'm 43 years old, but I certainly haven't got a dated opinion about anything. You know, I'm all for involvement and advancement in anything, whether it be, you know, when I first started fishing, we didn't have mobile phones on the bank. We now have mini computers in our pocket. You can sit there and watch Netflix live while you're on the bank. You can live stream your fishing. You can put it underwater. Some phones that you can just dunk underwater and film the lake bed. I mean, advancement technology, it's brilliant. And if you're going to sit there slagging off the people that also like it, I mean, that was this particular guy with the bait company. He slagged off people that go to shows. I mean, most of them are probably his customers. It's, I don't know, it's, I've had my rant. Jamie's rant is done.
If you've got anything to add. You'll have to get a jingle for your rants. All I've got to add to any of that really is, well, we live in a free country. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion, and you know, Facebook is the perfect platform to get it out there nowadays to everyone rather than just your own circle of friends. But fishing is a hobby, and to 99% of the people, it's nothing more.
No, but to these particular people we've just ranted about in this, it's a business to both of them, and yet they don't seem to like the business that they're in.
Well, you either embrace your change, you know, use it to your advantage, or fall by the wayside. But, you know, slagging it off is not going to do anyone any favours. You're just going to look like a bit of a tit.
Yeah, on that note, thy rant endeth.
Right.
I mean, we can move on to something more positive, but there's something else on the net that's quite controversial at the minute. You saw something in Cartwell, didn't you, Tim Paisley?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah. Yeah, he's penned a brilliant article, you know, following up from the one he did in Carp Talk, about the Carp Society, the problems, the alleged corruption, and he called for Malcolm Collar to stand down with immediate effect, citing irregularities.
And yeah.
Not heard anything from the Carp Society so far.
Yeah, I saw the piece. You sent me some screenshots as well. He calls out Malcolm Collier pretty seriously, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, and he lists quite a lengthy list of alleged, not brilliant words, you know, the irregularities that he stated and why. And
Well, he's not even alleged them. I mean, these are things that have happened. Yeah. This is why I took issue a few weeks back when some people were saying, you know, why is everyone getting involved in this now? You could have been involved in the Carp Society years ago to stop this. Well, these people saw a lot of this stuff that was going on. And were kind of, some of them were forced out of the Carp Society, some of them resigned. I mean, Tim Paisley resigned his Honorary Life membership because he was so disappointed with what was happening. Well, what was happening is moving over into the borderlines of illegal. And I think this is why all this stuff's been submitted by people like Tim. Now Tim has amassed all this information along with a number of other people, and they've basically printed all the irregularities that Malcolm Collier and these people have done. And I don't know if you want to go through some of them, because he's not alleged them. He's got factual evidence that a lot of this has happened. They've spoken to the estate agents that were asked to value it, and they've got documentation from certain people regarding this. Stuff was leaked.
Just a couple of things. I mean, if you want the full list, buy the latest Carp World, or even download it online. But there's a Malcolm Collier should go because he instructed estate agents to seek a purchaser for the Carp Society, including Horseshoe Lake, in hope of achieving a sale at $2 million, apparently without the knowledge of the board.
Yeah, that cannot be. I mean, clubs and societies, they have codes to be able to be called clubs and societies. And what it looks like they've tried to do is to get round these things that they are kind of legally obligated to. And I think a couple of the future points tell you how he's done that. I mean, the fact that they're trying to sell it, he's approached an estate agent and tried to sell it without the knowledge of the board. Straight away, that's bent. How can anybody... firstly, I mean, why should he have the money from the assets?
Like, it was paid for by members.
It was paid for by members. So those assets were bought by members. And, you know, as you'll find out, there are no members because of things that he's done. So, carry on.
Picking out there, he failed to admit bona fide membership applicants in January 2016 without valid reason, thereby preventing their attendance at the AGM and participation in society affairs. So that's another thing, just taking away the democracy that the society was.
Exactly.
There we go.
Carry on.
He failed to allow 2016 bona fide renewal of membership by at least one existing member in contravention of the articles of the association.
Yeah, Paul Salmon, I'm guessing that is. that one person. Yeah, and what they did when... They made the membership so you could only join in a 2-week period in January ahead of the AGM, and so they moved the AGM basically. They've moved it to the summer, and I don't know if anyone's been accepted yet. Oh yeah, they've said they're going to hear the new membership applications at the AGM, which is now in 6 months' time. I can only presume there's a reason for that.
Yeah. The reason is they don't want any members, don't want anyone sticking their nose in, but they are. But, there's another one of the reasons Tim gives, which is really interesting. By his actions, expose the society to risk of investigation and of having to refund monies to HMRC by reason of losing entitlement to membership organisation VAT relief.
Because there's no members, quite probably, or because they've changed stuff around. He changed the name of the Carp Society to Horseshoe Fisheries, so presumably it's a business and not a society anymore, which means he can sell the assets. He did this at an emergency general meeting, which he gave no notice to members, so that nobody could object, presumably. He was the only person in attendance, because he didn't, as he's going to be if he makes an emergency general meeting and tells nobody. He prepared and filed documents at company's house, which deceived the registrar into believing the company was compliant with its articles of company law. But obviously they weren't compliant because nobody knew about it, because he did it on his own. He changed the name without notice to the members at an emergency general meeting, again, that he made. he falsely claimed again to the registrar that that formalities had not been, that he falsely claimed that they'd been complied with. He hadn't. He ended the society membership base by removing all tangible benefits of membership and increasing subscription to £95 from £40. So they took away anything that you got for being a member, more than doubled the price. And made it so you didn't have to be a member to Fish Horseshoe Lakes. You had to have a separate membership to Fish Horseshoe Lakes. I mean, we could go on here. There's point after point after point. But it looks here like he's broke the law to me. I mean, I'm sure there are solicitors dealing with this. But the fact that Tim has called him out with these points in print, which is clearly, I mean, the libel laws are quite serious in this country. If he's libelled him without evidence, Tim's in a really sticky position. So Tim must be stupidly confident that he can back every single one of these claims up in a court, because he would not have said them. I mean, there's loads of them. Engineering dismissal of people that are objecting him. He's risked the society membership by doing stuff that the Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. He's basically cut corners all over the place. They now owe money to the HMRC for the VAT, which you were on about. There's so much stuff here, it's untrue. You know, he's instructed accountants to investigate the possibility of liquidating the company, meaning he can remove Horseshoe Lake from the company and put it in his own hands, or him and others. There's a whole list of them. It's an extremely interesting article, and I think everybody who gives a damn about carp fishing, I mean, there'll be people listening to this are like, well, what does it mean to me? What does it affect? How does it affect me? You know, and they're probably right. You know, somebody will buy Horseshoe Lake and you'll probably be able to buy a ticket on it. So even if you like Horseshoe Lake, I mean, it probably doesn't affect you a great deal. But the Carp Society were back in the day when I was young, they were one of two organisations, well, there was three organisations. It was the Carp Society, there was the BCSG, and the BCSG had its own entry level group called, can you remember what that was called?
It wasn't the ACA, was it? That was...
No.
CAA?
Yeah, Carp Anglers Association, that was it. CAA, you're right. I was a member of the Carp Anglers Association and the Carp Society, because I was young, that they had magazines that come out. This is before there was, you know, loads of carp magazines as there is now. And you wanted to be a part of like a group of like-minded people. You know, I was a young kid. I remember sending me a letter to the Carp Society, applying for membership, telling them what I'd caught. It was a big thing. Then we pledged money for them to be able to buy Horseshoe Lake, because they didn't have the money to buy it. Horseshoe Lake was up for sale. They leased it for a year while they raised the money from members. And what happened is they had X amount of members, like 1,000 members, whatever it was, pledging £200 each, which gave you a 10-year permit for the lake, and they used that money to buy the lake. The lake became very popular. After the 10-year membership ran out, they extended it a couple of years, and then they just sold tickets on it, and it's been an extremely popular day ticket lake ever since. That lake has gone on from the couple of hundred grand that they paid for it. In fact, I think it was 100 grand at the time. I think it was 500 members at £200 each, something like that. But let's say it was 200 grand to buy. It's now worth what, best part of 2 million on that site. It was, like I say, it was paid for by the members. Malcolm Collier was not on the original committee, if I believe. I think he was appointed later on. You know, I think the committee's changed. The Carp Society had loads of regional groups, it had meetings and talks and stuff in different areas of the country. It basically served carp anglers everywhere. And the reason why it doesn't now, and the reason why you might be thinking this doesn't affect you, is because of his actions and you know, other people that were compliant in the way this has gone. You know, you would be involved in the Carp Society as a carp angler in your area, because they would probably be putting on really good events for you in your local area if it all hadn't have gone like this. And I think if somebody's breaking the law, allegedly breaking the law to for personal gain within a, within our sport passion that we love, carp angling, I think we should all stand up and voice an opinion or do whatever we can to not let people get away with it. I mean, you know, somebody wants to risk their liberty and break a law about something, you know, that's not harming a fellow human being. That's their choice, that's their risk. When somebody's doing it within the industry that I'm involved in, and as one of the original pledges for that lake, I do have an opinion about it, and I think it's wrong. And I hope he feels, and anybody else involved in this conspiracy feels the full arm of the law if they have broke the law, which I'm sure, like I say, Tim, if none of this is true, if they had good intentions, then Tim's in severe trouble for libel here, because he's printed this, and libel's taken quite seriously in this country. You know, it could be millions of pound fine if he was found guilty of libel. You see what happens in the newspapers, and they print a story about a celebrity or whatever. I'm pretty sure Malcolm Collar's going to have his solicitors on this after it. So if anything Tim said here is not watertight, Tim's put himself in a sticky spot, which is why, I mean, for somebody who's been in the media as long as Tim has, which is why I know that he's crossed his T's and dotted his I's here, because this wouldn't, we wouldn't be reading this otherwise.
Tim's a very intelligent person. There's other very intelligent people involved.
Yep, including
the article. There's printed a letter from John Seale. If you don't know, is he a lawyer?
John Seale used to be the lawyer for the Carp Society many years ago. He's retired now. He's a well-known angler. Fishes Dinton. Got two fantastic lads that keep in touch with on the internet. If he has an opinion, it's correct. And what's John had to say about this?
It was basically a letter outlining different bits and bobs to Tim. Let me get this article with it on backup. I'll focus on a few examples to illustrate my concern. It's basically outlines your legal position. You know, bore people too much. I'll just be honest, I need to get my glasses on.
Great.
A theme which ran throughout the concentration of control in the hands of a small number of persons whose powers would be significantly increased. The society could be run by as few as two members and directors who could one and the same quorums for conducting business at annual general and board meetings would be two. It basically goes on to a way of it. Change the setup of the Carp Society to make it non-democratic for their own personal gain, should their plan have come to fruition. But the amount of, when you look at the evidence, what they've done with the members, I think Tim's right in his stance, and well, I think the end game is hopefully to restore the society to something like it used to be, run by members for members.
Yep, I think that would be a great outcome if they could protect the lake and reinvigorate, you know, get a new board on there, a new chairman, new board, and there's a gap for a society. You know, it could be great again, and it would start by making a 20 quid membership, making you know, putting a twice yearly magazine out again. Going back to regional organisers, I mean, it could happen again. I mean, carp fishing is bigger than it was then, and it used to work back in the day, so I'm pretty sure it could work again.
There's no reason why it shouldn't. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Let's move on to stamandleisure.com. A friend of ours, Christoph and Lee, they own the lake. You can get hold of both them guys. They pretty much booked up for this year now. I mean, you can book for 2017, but they have 3 or 4 weeks specifically that they are trying to sell. The 2nd of April, which is probably a bit short notice when you hear this, the 2nd of April, the 9th of April and the 16th of April are all weeks that are all available, and there's 2 weeks in May as well, the 14th of May to the 21st and the 21st of May to the 28th. And what you get, it will never be this cheap again. You get a 4-bedroomed farmhouse that sleeps 8 to 10 people. The farmhouse is fully kitted out. It's got satellite TV, big stoves to cook on, wood burners. It's got table tennis tables in there, four double bedrooms, all the facilities you'd expect in a fantastically large French farmhouse in a beautiful little village. Get your own private 5-acre lake with fish to just under £50. Plenty, it's a runs water. There's plenty and plenty of fish in there. You're going to catch every day. It's got all the facilities you could ever want. And it's only £850. You can take two families there easily, which is superbly cheap, I think, for 8 to 10 people. It's near the city of Limoges, which is full of museums and restaurants and places to visit. You get hold of Lee on his UK mobile 07854 857 374, or ring Chris, who we're going to get on the show next week actually, because he is French and he's going to tell you about the local area and stuff. But you can get Chris on 07428 183 018. There's like drone videos of the village, the lake and the house and everything on our Carpcast page. You can have a look on the website www.stamandleisure.com, or give one of the guys a call. But there's like 5 weeks that they're trying to fill for this year now, and they're all coming up fairly soon, so you need to be rapid on that. Like I say, the 9th of April and the 16th of April is 2 weeks there where you can have the farmhouse, £850, and the lake. And then there's a couple of weeks in May, 14th of May to the 21st of May, and the 21st of May to the 28th of May. They're all Saturdays to Saturdays. Check them out, give one of them two guys a call, or have a look on the website, or check out the show notes and you can get in touch with them. But the place is fantastic. You'll be blown away. You'll never get it for that price again. I'm sure it'll be £1,200-1,300 next year, because of the popularity of this year, and I'm pretty sure people are going to want to book again once they've been, because the facilities are ace. I mean, the fishing's great, and as Christoph said to me, like, once you get to the house you won't believe what you get for the money, because it's fully kitted out. So what are we doing now?
Oh, I've got a choice. Should we go to a quick worth a look?
Yeah,
I'll put this one because it caught my eye. You know, we all love a lot of the underwater work that's been done now, but it's a place I've fished, you know, not much like, just a couple of short winter sessions a while back. But Majestic Pool out of Beverley, on their Facebook page, they've had some people from beneath British waters. They've had their divers in and put some excellent films of them swimming around under the lake, showing you the lake bottoms, and they're swimming into snags, and, you know, and they come across plenty of carp as well. It's well, basically, just go in there and have a look for yourself. You know what?
Right, and where's that?
It's Majestic Pool, Beverley, East Yorkshire.
Yeah, I've seen that name crop up, but I've not seen the video yet.
Yeah, well, that's why I thought I'd put it in, bring a bit of attention to it, because it's, you know, it's very interesting. I found it because there's more weed than you'd expect this time of year as well on the bottom there.
Yeah, there's a lot of weed everywhere I've fished so far this year. There's plenty of weed about, and fresh stuff as well. And spring is finally coming as well. It's 15 degrees today and yesterday, and there's stuff sprouting everywhere. There was little critters crawling out the lake, sitting on my pans. When I fished this week, there was a wasp flying around my rubbish bag. Spring is here.
I hate wasps.
Yeah, I don't like them either.
What got me on this video as well, they showed you a couple of small clear spots, you know, like little carp holes. And it did make you think, you know, to actually fish those, you've got to be so accurate. But if you get that right, well, if you're catching.
Yeah, definitely. This would be one of my edges, you know, really being out, you know, spots that are too small to get a marker float up in, but just having a lead around. Like I said, we've described this before, but using mono that doesn't have stretch in, or the minimum amount of stretch, why we like the P-line, so that you can lead around with just a lead, you know, on your clip, and then just clip your hook bait on once you've found the spot. And it might take you loads and loads of casts to just get it right, but when you drop it in that hole, you're just like, that's staying there till I get a bite, you know. We've both done that. Something else that's worth a look, we mentioned it briefly earlier, and that's the latest Nash
Worth a Look
offering. It's going to be out on DVD. It's currently been It's currently been released on YouTube. You can find it at the YouTube Nash page, the Nash TV page on YouTube, I should say. The editing level and the quality of the production is unreal. I know there is some good stuff out there now. You can have a look at it on www.nashtackle.co.uk as well. It's in 11 different languages. I mean, it shows the level that they're going to now on this sort of stuff. I mean, these DVDs that companies do, they basically replace the old catalogues, don't they, that that used to release. It's a way of giving entertainment while showing the products within it. So it kind of makes you want to watch it, which is better than just flicking through it's another way where, you know, the marketing in carp angling has moved forward, and I think they're brilliant. I mean, I've seen nothing but amazed comments. It's a free 4-hour fishing video, and yes, there are products in there, but it's a story all the way through. Now, I've not watched it all yet. I've watched the first couple of chapters. I've watched the Alfie Routh bit, who's a fantastic young angler. He's doing all the scope black ops stuff. He fishes a lot of the park lakes and lakes around London, which is where he lives. He catches 30s and 40s all the time. He's a great little angler. Does a lot of possible guesting and stuff. But I mean, just the fact that this is in 11 different languages. I've watched the Eurobanks bit of it as well, where Alan Blair and Ollie go around Europe, which they fished a fantastic Lake Bled, which is stunning. If you haven't watched it yet, then go and watch it. It just looks amazing. I want to go. I really want to go. There's just action, venues, countries, tips, and just beautiful fish. It's presented over a series of short films. Like I said, it advertises the equipment. You discover new bed chairs, the Scope Black Ops that Alfie Routh does, and the Dwarf and H-Gun stuff, the new rods, the NR Toros. Simon Crowe's bit on there recounts his years fishing. I've not watched that bit yet, but the reviews that I've seen on it, people say it's amazing. He's had a fantastic year on the Key. Alan Blair does Redmire Pool. I watched the Jordan Dix bit on a place I'd never even heard of, a place called Churn Pool in the Cotswold Water Park, where he has it right off. He really does have one of them epic sessions in January as well, I think it was. Obviously the Eurobanks do they do an 8-day road trip across Europe, 7 countries, 3,000 miles. I mean, for free, this is an amazing video. Yeah, it's epic viewing for sure, and it's definitely reset the bar as far as these kind of free tackle DVDs go. I mean, it's really good, and it's definitely worth a look.
Worth a look.
Yeah, I've certainly got to give it a look. I've watched maybe about 10 minutes of it as I got in yesterday.
Yeah, it looks good. Looks really good.
Yeah, we've been spoiled at the minute. Could have just put the Masterclass DVD out.
That's right, yeah. That's definitely worth a look as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I'll watch all of that and give it a full review over the next couple of weeks. But there's one bit I've seen, Ali's out doing some long range fishing in Croatia, getting double and triple takes while he's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, Croatia's a place I need to look at. I know Lake Bled's drivable from Croatia, but they have a few decent music festivals that I'm into in Croatia. I've been before to a place called The Garden. Lake Bled's about a 2-hour drive from there. So it's something I'm going to look at, especially now I've got a camper van and stuff. I don't know if I'll get there this year, but I've been speaking to Frank Warwick a bit as well about some lakes over that way. So it may be that, we get a trip. At some point,
cast on tour.
Yeah, definitely. We have been working in partnership with Carp Talk this year as well. They let us know what's in their current edition. This will be released on Monday. The print version is out on Tuesday, which is tomorrow. should hear this just before, or depending when you listen to it. But the print version comes out every Tuesday, but there's a digital version that comes out every single Saturday. So it's out now. You can get the latest version. It's only £1.49 from pocketmags.com. You can view it on any device, your Apple phone, iPad, Android phone, or PC, or general laptop. You get it from anywhere. And do you want to tell us what's in this week's map?
I will, but before I do, I'll tell you about a little chat I had with Paul Monkman, who sends us his Carp Talk interview at interview information.
Yeah.
I was chatting to him at Five Lakes. He was telling me in the bar, I think it was John Mack, told a couple of people that he was you.
Hey?
Yeah, apparently, he looks like you. And a couple of people who actually believed it and congratulated him on his Cops Lake fish that you caught.
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, he's like, he's your mini me.
Was he drunk?
Yeah, I think there was probably a lot of people drunk that night. There's the always as it showed. There was a few bleary eyes on the Sunday when I was there, anyway.
yeah, cool. Hello to Paul.
What's in Carp Talk? You've got Nigel Sharp had his first UK 50 in the shape of whiskers. Now that actually surprised me. He's been around for a long time, Nigel. I thought he'd already had quite a few.
Where does that live, whiskers? Do you know?
Whiskers? I'm not sure, but I'm assuming it's got really big barbels. We delve into the subject of Kev Nash's Cops and Church Lakes and compare how the prices of a session on the famous Exit Waters vary with a trip abroad.
Yep, as we know, they definitely compare.
Yep. I like this one. UK's biggest canal carp, a 45¼-pound fully scaled, caught by Bill Phillips.
The previous biggest canal carp was Grand Union, wasn't it? A 40 that escaped from Savvy.
Yeah,
we had that story in the previous
podcast. Chris Bull told us, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've also got a 45½-pound common called Toe Jam.
Yeah, which is another one from Christchurch at Lynch Hill, a place you can come and fish with us on the Carpcast Social.
How the hell does a fish get called Toe Jam?
We spoke about fish name, didn't we, once before?
Yeah.
There's loads of features in there as well. Mark Holmes talks about his liquid. He's going liquid in the new season, something I'm looking at. Going to be speaking to Gary Bays very soon regarding my liquidy plans, kind of inspired by Mark, and a few things I've been thinking about for a few years. Ian Poole comes back as well. He's talking about zigs as he gets ready for like probably the finest zig time of the year we've got coming up now, haven't we? This first bit where fish are waking up, although have they been to sleep this winter? I'm not sure. There seem to have been fishing all winter, but yeah, it's zig time at the minute. Ian McMillan's in there as well, talking about Shimano's Free Casting Academy. It says the usual competitions are giving away a Tracker Level Light compact chair, or three of them in fact. So check out Carp Talk pocketmags.com for the digital version, which is only £1.49, or get in your shops from Tuesday for the latest edition. Got some questions, haven't we, Mark?
Ask us a question.
We have got a few. We're going to dive in. Scrolling back up. Here we go. Mark Limerick. He says, "Hey, you guys. A question for you or this week's guest or even the carp gods. Should we summon the carp gods for their help?" He says, "My club lake has been closed from December and opens on the 12th of March. It's a day only lake, so we get there at 6 in the morning and stay until dusk. My favourite lake on there are singles up to 30s, but everyone says it can be weird for the first month. I've not been able to do the first day there before, so do I spod bait and fish bottom baits, or do I zig from a foot up? Some advice would be great, as this session will be my birthday present to my 11-year-old son, and I want to make it special. Just reading this, and well done on the cast and the Northern Show." What do you think? Because we know a lot of waters, they can be a bit hit and miss if they've been closed for a while and all of a sudden they're getting leads thrown at them from all angles.
Yeah, it's a club lake, so obviously it depends how busy it's going to be on that particular lake. My advice is make sure you have everything set up. So, I mean, when you're fishing days only lakes, it's that first hour and last hour, which are the two most productive. So you need to be fishing from within a minute or two of being set up, of arriving at the lake. You just, you know, you want your hook baits tied on, any bags or however you're fishing. You want to be ready. So your rods are literally out the car and in your peg and flicked out. You don't want to be, especially that first couple of hours, you don't want to be casting around. I don't know if you can get down before, what day is it now?
Yeah, if you get down before it opens, do a bit of
that'd be pretty
reconnaissance
difficult.
Mission.
Have you seen the date?
12th of March. When is it today?
It's the 14th.
All right. Well, I hope you did well, Mark.
We're sorry we didn't get that, but I guess we might as well finish this question up anyway. When you're approaching this sort of lake, so any days only lake, it's the first hour and last hour, so you want to be ready before you cast out. You want to have everything ready. I'd have gone there with a rod and a lead a few days before, had a look at the swims I fancied fishing, had a cast about in them so that I knew where I wanted to fish once I arrived, have rigs made up, flick them out the second you get there, catapult a few free offerings around them, or try and get some bait in the day before, even better, so you're not putting any bait out when you arrive. And fish for them first couple of hours. If you don't catch, you know, if you haven't caught anything by 11 a.m, then you can have a lead around, try and find a different spot or a better spot. The first month, March, I mean, it's weird on a lot of lakes. I mean, fish are getting caught at the minute, but March is generally a slow month. I mean, I would usually advise zigs in March, but the fact that fish have been getting caught consistently off the bottom for the last couple of months anyway, it's not the go-to method to have to get a zig out, but I would certainly have a zig out on one of the rods. Yeah, I mean, I hope you and your 11-year son did catch on his birthday. And send us another question in, and we might get to it before he needed to. Have we got any more?
Yeah, sorry about that one, Mark. But yeah, hope you did well. And we've got another question I'm going to pop in, because, you know, it's something I can certainly relate to. Stephen Stig Jones, he says, as a novice triad carper, not exactly rolling in cash, I fish with a lot of budget gear. My most expensive purchases are line and bait. Current PB stands at £23.5. I'd love to start chasing 30s and 40s. Can it be done on cheaper gear, or do I need to start saving up for big name brands?
Ask us a question.
You're going first?
It can be done on cheap gear. You're sorry?
Are you going first?
Yeah, I'll go first on this, because I were saving up for gear with my paper round, and a lot of the time I've, as you know, when I've been, you know, chasing, like, you know, the big fish around, I was travelling a lot, I was tolerating crap jobs, you know, 3-on-3-off, 4-on-4-off sort of things. The money wasn't great, but, you know, it gave me time to go fishing. So yes, I wasn't exactly rolling in it either. I mean, it is nice to have all the gear and the best brands, but they are not necessary. And it's also one thing when I've come across a couple of times when I've done tuitions, when people have come out with me and, you know, they've got two rods, two reels, buzzers, and, you know, we teach people how to use that gear, because there's no point me breaking out all my gear saying, right, this is a mark rod, this is a spod rod, we do this, we do that. Teach people how to feature find with, you know, just two fishing rods, how to bait up, you know, with those. And since the mini and midi spom came out, it's even easier. And a lot of it is watercraft and your rigs and where you put them, because your carp, it does not care if you're using 150 quid alarms or rods and reels or 15 quid alarms.
No, you've got to make sure your gear's functional. You want a reel that's, you know, not churning and not going to, like, grind up so it ever costs you a fish. You know, as long as your reel's functioning normally, you're wise to invest money on a decent quality bait firm. You're wise to keep your line, you know, fresh and up to date. But again, there's not a lot of difference between the dearest line and the cheapest line. Like, that is not something that's there's not a massive, you know, I can't remember the last time I actually bought line out of a fishing shop. I don't know what a 1,000 meter spool is these days, but 1,000 meter spool's going to do 3 rods. Make sure you put some backing on it, and it's definitely under 20 quid, you know, and I don't even think you could spend more than 30 quid if you wanted to. So, you know, make sure your lines, as opposed to using the most expensive line, you probably don't need to, but I would make sure you change it regularly. I mean, I used to use a Daiwa sensor at like 7-8 quid a spool, but that's because I used to change my line like every 6 sessions, something like that, maybe less, because I was obsessed about keeping the line perfect. You don't, when you do catch a fish, you don't want to lose it, and you certainly don't want to lose it because of the line going. So, I mean, I don't know how many people strip a rod length of line off. Every, you know, we leave our rods made up a lot of the time. And you'd be surprised how quickly the bit kind of either before your tubing, immediately in front of your tubing, or in front of your leader if you use some sort of tie-on leader. Amazing how quick that bit of line A, deteriorates, and B, it gets stretched when you cast. So if you imagine casting, even if you're only casting a 3 ounce lead 60 yards, you're stretching your line. So that line from your lead to where your finger is holding the line on the spool, every time you cast out, that's being stretched. You're pre-stretching it, and you can only pre-stretch that so many times before the line's like a lot thinner than it was, which means it's not as abrasion resistant, and it'll snap at a much lower breaking strain. And if you ever done any lakes where you're going for the big cast, you know, you're really going. I used to find that there's one lake in particular, Wire Lake, where you needed to cast 130 odd yards in certain pegs to the island, but you weren't allowed to use leaders, and it was a 15 pound line minimum. So you had to get a 15 pound line, generally 0.35 diameter, and you were winding it up with a 4 ounce lead literally as much as you could. But what I used to find is if I had 6 casts with that line, the 7th cast, it would crack off, you know, going for the extreme chuck this was. Because what's happened, you pre-stretch that bit of line, so it would quite often leave the lead and the rig on the floor behind me. It would snap really easy on the first bit. Now, that's an extreme, you know, going for like extreme casting, but what you used to have to do after I'd had 4 or 5 casts, if I hadn't got it on the spot, I'd have to strip a rod length of line off and then try again. And if, you know, if you hadn't got it on the spot you wanted it within 5 casts, like, you'd have to strip another bit of line off. Now, that it's, I actually strip that rod length of line off every single time I go fishing. I never just get the rod straight out of the rod bag and put a lead on it and flick it out. I never do that, because that bit of line gets deteriorated over a course of a normal fishing session, even a day's fishing. It might twist, it might go thinner, it might get nicked. I'll certainly always check it anyway. I'll run my fingers down it looking for little nicks and stuff. So you're wise to pay attention to your line. I don't think you have to go for the most expensive line, but the, you know, pull a rod length off every single time you go fishing, and do change your line regularly. It's the thing that connects you to the fish, you know, so it is extremely important. As far as the rods and stuff, I mean, you just need a rod that will suit your situation. If you're only ever fishing small lakes, nothing more than an underarm flick, you know, pretty much any rod is going to do the job above 1¾ pound test curve. Quite often the smaller rods, like the through action floppier rods, have more power when they bend right through to the butt. You don't need to spend ridiculous money on rods, and even if you need distance rods, even if you're casting a long way, there are, you know, poker stick type rods, you know, really stiff rods that are not very expensive, and they're not going to be as nice for playing fish close in. You might have to have your drag set looser when the fish is under the rod tips because of the stiffness of them, but you don't have to buy 400 pound super tippy rods. You know, it's a luxury. You can adjust to any single situation with cheap gear, for sure, as long as your reel's functional. Like I say, it doesn't crunch and grind, so it's never going to cost you a fish. You can pretty much use any rod. Pay attention to your line, and like you say, apply your bait correctly. The fish don't know if you got a 400 quid rod or a 50 quid rod. My first ever carp rod was a Sundridge 10 foot, cost me 11 quid. Steve Jones's tackle in Wilmslow many, many years ago. It was crappy, and to be fair, I think I had it up until a couple of years ago. I'd never used it, I just kept it, but it was extremely cheap, so yeah, you don't need to be a tackle tart.
Now, and there's one thing that's taught me since working in a tackle shop is the amount of, you know, cheaper end but really functional gear available now is the best it ever has been. You know, yeah. The stuff there I wish was around when I was starting.
Definitely. We spoke about this before, about stuff not being purpose-made stuff, but there's stuff for everything now. So, yeah. You don't need to spend lots of money on gear, but it seems like you're thinking about the right thing. So, carry on doing what you're doing, definitely. And good luck.
And I've had a few messages with Stephen, and he's booked on one of our socials. So,
oh, great. That is great.
That is something worth spending our money on, because we can pick our brains. We'll certainly point him in the right direction.
Yeah, cool. We got one more question?
We got one more, yes, from Colin Meadows. Says, I have a question I'm sure you have been asked many times. I'm an average angler, fish different kinds of lakes, and have always done okay. However, I want to step it up this season a bit. I have never played with glugging hook baits. Any tips on glugging for beginners? And so much on the web, it's bewildering.
Ask us a question.
As mentioned about liquids before, I mean, it doesn't need to be bewildering. Most bait companies do matching glugs for whatever pop-ups or hook baits you use. I know Nash do. They do the Frenzy range. I mean, if you just walk into any tackle shop, you're going to see a range of liquids. Have a listen to the Frank Warwick interview that we did a couple of podcasts ago. He talks about dipping baits in neat flavour in these hook baits. I've actually done really well when I've glugged hook baits, and I haven't done it every year. But I explained it. We answered a listener's question about my corkboard pop-ups, didn't we? Do you remember a few shows ago?
Weeks ago.
I go into detail about, I used to make my own corkboard pop-ups, dip them in the glug, dry them out, dip them, dry them out. I'd double dip, treble dip, and dry them out over a period of weeks, so that there's different layers of flavouring in, so that when the attraction's coming back out in the water, it's coming out in different layers. Hopefully for a long period of time. Because I used to make my corkboard pop up so I could leave them out for 2 or 3 days at a time. But pretty much there's nothing to know. I mean, you need a glug, you need to start off with a glug. I don't know if you're talking about making your own, because I don't think you need to make your own. Most companies do a matching hook bait dip. You know, we advertise the DNA stuff at the start of the show. I mean, all of their boilie packs come with a 250mm bait soak. It's as simple as open the bag of bait. I mean, let's say I used to, with the Nash stuff, I used to go, the bait used to come in 5 kilo bags, so I'd take a 5 kilo bag for like a longer session, and I'd get, you don't need to pour much into the bag, but I'd get whatever glug that I was using. I'd pour probably only like 50mm to 100mm, pour it into the bag, seal the bag back up, shake it, turn it over, and then just leave the bait in it. It just soaks in on its own. The hook baits, you can leave your glugs in a pot. You know, I would get a little pop-up pot or an old pop-up pot, or you can buy them. Put like about 4 or 5mm of bait in the bottom of the 4 or 5mm deep in the bottom of the pot, and then just drop my hook baits in it, put the lid back on, shake it up, and then leave it, and then shake it up. You know, every time I look at the pot and it's, I see all the boilies drying out, I just give it a shake again. So when it comes to making your own hook bait glug, I'm not sure if that's what's talking about. I mean, there are a few oils that you can buy and add your own flavourings to, but I don't really see the need to it. I mean, maybe that's something we can ask one of the bait experts, you know, if you're going to make a glug, what are your key ingredients? But they're generally just some sort of fish oil that's flavoured. But like I say, most boilies you can buy a ready-made bait glug, so I'd keep a little pot for your hook baits, and then I'd just pour some in the bag over your boilies and shake them up a bit, seal the bag, keep turning it over just to make sure that they're all coated, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, there's not a great deal I can add to that. You know, I like having several hook, you know, when my rods are out, I'll have several hook baits hung up on hook links ready, You know, I'll have them, you know, dipped or even gooed up. But I like to have them, you know, drain out. You know, just makes the leakage last that little bit longer once they're out there.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about my corporal pop pulps. I would like soak them, dry them, soak them, dry them, soak them, dry them. Keep doing them like that.
Yeah, just all the dips I've got are shop bought.
Cool. Well, I think we've been going quite a long time here.
Yeah, I think we have. We've got a top trumps down there, but I think we're going to save that one.
Yeah, we will bring top trumps back soon. We just keep running out of time every week, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We just waffle on.
Cool. Well, we've got lots more of Kevin Nash as well. We're going to be dropping him in under different subjects over the next few weeks as well. Back to a regular guest next week as well as that. But until then, we'll see you next time.
Next time.